go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
This is Patriots Playbook.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the seven route.
Patriots Playbook, breaking down last Sunday's game.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because okay. The backers are going to fast read over the top.
Next Sunday's game.
Want to go odd. 5. Patriots Playbook. 51 mirror.
And the rest of the 2007 NFL
go
season.
Stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
And some of the fun stuff in between.
Even. 51 grapes. Even. 51 grapes.
And now... he's John Rook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
There we go. Now it works. Patriots Playbook for Thursday. Welcome inside Gillette Stadium and our Patriots.com radio studios. I'm John Rook, and now the PFW progress is complete for, well, as Fred says, the week. We'll try to push onward and upward and see if we can't figure out what else to talk about today. There's still a lot to talk about today. Quite honestly, the main thing that I wanted to kind of get started with today has to do with a lot of the conversation that Don Shula brought to the table over the last couple of days. We spent quite a bit of time on yesterday's program talking about that very thing. This morning on ESPN Radio, on Mike and Mike in the Morning, Mike Greenberg and Mike Golic had Coach Shula on as a guest in their 8 a.m. Eastern Time hour. And I've never seen someone backpedal as quickly as that 75-year-old man did that this morning, or however old he is. And we'll get into some of that, but I want you to be thinking along those lines. We've got a couple of other things on the agenda today, in addition to some conversation here and with you via email, of course, as we always do. Adam Schefter from NFL Network, one of their premier NFL reporters, is going to join us here in about 10 minutes. And so Adam Schefter will join us, and we'll talk a little Patriots. We'll talk a little Randy Moss. We'll talk a little NFL going into Week 10. And, of course, as we normally have on Thursdays, right at the top of the 3 o'clock hour, we'll have Russell Baxter, the NFL Research Coordinator for ESPN. He'll join us, and we'll take a look at the schedule around the National Football League for Week 10. That's all upcoming on the program. Today, also in studio, I am pleased to be joined by not one, not two, but three guests. Now, on Tuesday, if you were here early this week, introduced to you a young man who is one of my graduate students in the course that I teach at Emerson College in Boston called Sports Radio, ironically enough. That's what we actually try to teach them, a little bit about the medium. And I've got three more of my outstanding students who are in this class who have said that they wanted to come in and try a little sports talk radio here with you Patriots fans, because undoubtedly they are also Patriots fans. So Elias Feldman, Zach Wintrow, and Bethany Camise are all in studio today. And I hope, if you're a Patriots fan, and whether or not you appreciated a different point of view from Tom, and by the way, I thought Tom did a great job on Tuesday. Tom's biggest problem is sometimes Tom doesn't breathe in between things, but those are things we're going to work on in class, right? So today, anyway, we have Elias, we have Zach, and we have Bethany, and I hope that you will engage them in your thoughts as well, because first and foremost, you guys are Patriots fans, right?
Absolutely.
I figured as much. And so that was one of the reasons why you mostly wanted to be here and try to experience a little bit of this and talk about the football team, which, of course, has got to be one of your passions. Now, I'm going to ask each of you a fairly typical question, but I think this also helps in terms of kind of giving those who are listening, because everybody who's listening here is a Patriots fan. They follow football closely. Not everybody, but the overwhelming majority of our listeners here in this particular venue are out of state or out of the area. And they do this. They come to us every day or during the week, or they check in, or they download our podcast, because everything we do live here is available for podcast later in case you can't make it, although I don't know why you can't set your appointments to 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern time. It's beyond me. But they can download it for podcast and listen to it a later time. Okay? Everybody here is a diehard football fan, certainly first and foremost, but obviously a Patriot fan as well. They come here for their Patriots fix. And so we try to give them that. And a couple of things that we do here on the show are, we certainly give them a lot of opinion. We give them the latest news as it comes down from the Patriots. We give them interviews from the players and the coaches and the media, the people that cover, you know, not only the Patriots, but cover the National Football League as well, Adam Schefter being one of those coming up in a few minutes. So what is it about New England and this football team? What got you started? I mean, is it because this is something your parents did, your family did, or was there something about the New England Patriots maybe that just sort of clued you in a few years ago? Elias, well, I'll start with you.
I'm certainly a Patriots fan. I'd be lying if I said that I was a Patriots fan from birth.
I'm from San Francisco, so I grew up as a Niners fan. It wasn't bad rooting for the Niners in the early 90s either.
No, that's true.
Super Bowl in 1994.
In fact, you can make, a very good argument that one of the best teams of all time in the NFL was one of those Niners teams, you know, in the 1990s, which, of course, the Patriots were trying to get up there with them on that level this year.
No right? doubt about it. And right? I grew up with Joe Montana, Jerry Rice, Roger Craig, Ronnie Lott. So, obviously, I followed some of the great athletes of football in the early 90s, late 80s. But being in New England, it's hard to deny that the Patriots are the team around here, and it's obviously been fun to follow. Everybody in New England seems to get involved, whether they're diehard Patriots fans or they jump on the bandwagon. People love football around here, and it's my first time to Gillette, so...
You're actually getting the full, you know, full Monty here. Zach, you're a native New Englander, right?
Born and raised in Connecticut.
Okay. So in that regard, then, I would assume that you've been a Patriots fan for a while.
I've been brainwashed for life.
That's perfect. All right. So then what is it about following this football team that just kind of sucks you in?
Well, I've been a Pats fan my whole life, so it's not really anything that sucked me in. I've just always been following the team, watching the games. I just really like the way, especially now, Belichick runs his team. I think he's, obviously, everybody thinks he's one of the best coaches of all time, but he runs such a tight ship that I think that it's just something to be admired. I don't care about all the camera gate. I think, yeah, they might have gotten an advantage, but it's not that big of a deal. But I very much admire the way he runs this ball club, and he just runs a great tight ship.
Bethany's laughing. Okay, she's got the big smile on right here. So now, what is it about the Patriots, though? Now, you're also a native, correct?
Yeah.
New Englander?
South Shore, yeah.
South Shore? All right. Well, see, then you're not too far away from here. So in that regard, then, what is it about this team that has kind of pulled you in?
Well, I've always been a fan. My family is just the biggest Patriots fans. There's nothing on our house other than Patriots once it comes to the fall, whether they're watching ESPN, NFL Network. They're constantly watching everything about the Patriots.
They actually have NFL Network?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, see, no, that's a good thing because, you know, that's a big controversy now. Is, you know, Comcast won't allow, you know, NFL Network on their cable system unless it's on a pay tier.
We have satellites, so we get it.
Ah, see, no, there, okay,
dad,
all right.
My dad can't live without NFL Network.
Is there anything better, though, than a pretty girl who has satellite television?
Not much.
There's just, I'm telling you, that's just, you guys, obviously, you know, you're all set, right? It's a good thing. I also have the satellite at home, and I can't do without it. I can't remember, and I'm not, you know, shilling for satellite TV at all because I used to work for a cable company a number of years ago, but honestly, I don't remember what it was like before I had it.
Yeah.
I can't do without it. My 12-year-old at home, you know, you guys saw him in class last week. He came in and took the test with you guys. He will flick back and forth. I said, what channel is the such and such game on? Boom, right to it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, without even looking at the guide or anything, he knows the channel number, knows everything. He's got everything. You know, he's got one of those photographic memories. But, the best part about NFL Network, guys, is, and again, I'm not shilling for him, and not just because Adam's coming on the show in a little bit. I love watching the Wednesday replays when they do, you know, a couple of the games of the week. And then what they do is they mix the game highlights in with some of the commentary and some of the post-game comments from the players themselves about particular plays, big plays that happen. And they'll throw up little stats on the screen and all that kind of stuff. And that, to me, really adds to complete and total fulfillment and enjoyment of watching the game because it does a lot of the explaining, especially when you get a controversial play happening. Like, for instance, this last week. Oh, my God. I mean, the penalties that were called, you know, in Sunday's game, and we spent a lot of this week obviously talking a lot about that and whether or not there was any kind of quote-unquote controversy, and we'll jump into some of that. But, you know, if there's ever a call on a particular play that you're like going, what was the deal with that or what was the reason behind it, they actually bring people in, and they not only talk to the players, but they also they will bring Mike Pereira in, who's the, you know, NFL supervisor officials, and they'll get reasoning behind this and try to explain it. So if you're a football fan, it's an unbelievable thing to be watching.
I remember right before the Patriots Super Bowl or AFC Championship last year against the Colts, for the whole week preceding up to the game, they showed all the Patriots' big playoff wins from the past 5 years. They showed all the Super Bowls. They showed the snow game against the Raiders and all the AFC Championship games. So that was a lot of fun to watch. I really enjoy going back and watching those classic games because, quite frankly, most of the games that the Patriots played in the playoffs, since during their Super Bowl run, have been classic football games. They haven't had too many blowouts. They haven't had too many games that weren't good football games. And I think that's the most fun about watching those games again on NFL Network.
Do you guys ever watch the old NFL film shows on ESPN?
Oh, yeah. Callis is the best, and those are fantastic. A lot of 49ers footage.
Oh, well, of course, yeah, from especially the late 80s and early 90s.
He's also a hell of a ladies' man.
See, there you go. There's Mr. There's the voice of God. Voice of God 2. John Facenda was the original voice of God on NFL films. He passed away. I want to say he. When did he die? Did he die back in? I think about 20, almost 30 years ago. Gary's going to look that up, but I'm pretty sure. But this guy, he's the one that talks about the frozen tundra and all. I mean, you've heard, you know, his voice is one of the most recognizable voices, maybe in the history of broadcast. And I think he has been gone for a while. Callis's voice is very close, and they have a couple of guys in NFL films right now that do a really good job. But
I tell you what, I was watching a show on ESPN the other day, and they were showing. They always show the NFL film shows.
Yeah, right.
And they had a show about Bubby Brister, and I was like,
oh my God,
I don't even know. I know who Bubby Brister is, obviously, but why would I want to watch a show about Bubby Brister? Well, I got pulled in, and I watched the entire show about Bubby Brister. And let me tell you, it wasn't really that bad of a show. They do a really good job.
And what was it about Bubby Brister that actually amazed you?
I never knew this, but he was supposed to be a top-tier quarterback when
right.
he came out of college.
Right.
And then he just kept getting screwed every single time he got an opportunity. He was almost like he was never in the right place at the right time.
Right.
And then one time he did get he got a shot and he got hurt with the Broncos. It's right
Remember
after
that.
Elway retired.
Right.
So, I mean, it was actually a pretty fascinating show about a guy who was, for the most part, a career backup.
Yeah. In fact, I met Bubby Brister. Would have been 1980, I want to say 89 or 90. It was one of those 2 years. I was doing a promotional thing at Disney World for the TV station I was working at the time. And Bubby Brister was competing for another television station's team. They were called the Goofy Games at Disney. And basically teams from markets all over the country that were primarily, not all the time, but primarily in NFL markets. And Brister was competing for the Denver team. At that time, I guess he was. I don't remember if it was because he was there in the off season or if he was already there. I'd have to go back and look at the rosters to verify it all. But he was just as nice as the day was long. I mean, honest to goodness, you know, you'd think that, you know, guy, because most of the guys who competed were like retired guys, and there weren't a lot of current athletes on these teams. But he was, and the only thing I remembered about Bubby Brister was the fact that he was just incredibly generous with his time with the kids. It's one of the few times that I had seen in a long time an athlete, a current professional athlete, I mean, actually literally sit down in the middle of the floor and play with little kids. It was stunning, you know, and of course, naturally, all the TV cameras whoosh, come running over and, you know, film all this stuff. But I just thought that was incredibly nice. So, yeah, he was a good guy.
Yeah, that show captured, he seemed like the ultimate good old boy from down south.
He was.
He has that real thick southern drawl, and from that show, they did a great job portraying him as a real good, I think he's from Louisiana
Tech, I think, is where he went to school, right?
Good old southern boy.
Yeah, kind of, you know, followed Terry Bradshaw.
Yeah.
Terry Bradshaw went to Louisiana Tech, if I'm not mistaken. So, yes, John Facenda passed away in 1984. So if you haven't heard his voice, by all means, you'll definitely recognize it. All right, let's pause here for just a couple of moments, because what we want to do is we want to jump into a couple of things in the aftermath of Pat's Colts Super Bowl 41.5, such as it was. And Adam Schefter does such a great job covering the National Football League for NFL Network, joins us now here inside Patriots Playbook. Adam, nice to talk to you. Thank you very much for the time today.
John, thank you for making the time. Appreciate it.
Well, listen, first and foremost, I have to admit that I heard you this morning on with Dennis and Callahan on EEI and here in the area. And obviously, you go on every week with those guys. So I'm glad that you can actually teach some folks in New England some actual football knowledge, because, as you know, we're all a bunch of hayseeds up here.
Well, listen, it's a pleasure to be on with those guys. They do a great job, and anytime you get to be on in the Boston area, that's always a big thrill.
Well, it's kind of a neat place to be right now, not only because the Red Sox won a World Series, but the Patriots have this, you know, 9-0 thing going, and I guess the first question I would have is the obvious one. Is this team capable of 16-0 in your estimation?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I don't even hesitate when you ask that question, John. I think that when you look at them, I'd say the chances are that they do go 16-0. Do you see anyone in that schedule that's going to slow them down? The only team that's going to beat them is them, period.
Yeah.
If they have one of those games where they turn over the football four times, where they have a number of mistakes and breakdowns, then New England could lose. But short of that, I don't see them losing a game. I just don't see that happening.
I think were two games that were after this point in time, as we kind of surmised this, we started talking about 16-0, at least from the fans' point of view here, Adam, as you're well aware, probably after week two. And the talk is actually, believe it or not, died down a little bit over the last couple of weeks, because I think people were kind of like, all right, let's just kind of get through the meat of the season, or at least let's get by the Colts. And now that the Colts game is completed and you can kind of sit back on it and reflect a little bit. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we take a look at the second half of the schedule, and there are a couple of games, actually three games, that certainly appear to be at least somewhat of a challenge. First one would be Baltimore, but then the way that the Ravens played this last week, I don't know about that. They got to find something at quarterback, and it's certainly not going to be what they currently have. Pittsburgh is certainly worthy, but the Pittsburgh game is here. If it were at Heinz Field, I'd feel a lot different about it. And then, of course, the last game of the year at New York, and, of course, there's the old age-old thing that's gone on since, in the last few years anyway, of resting your players before the playoffs. And I wonder, because we've seen this team with New England going both ways with this. They've played players right up to the end, and they've rested players, you know, based on the last few years. Because the Patriots be in position to have an off week after the game with the Giants, I wonder if they don't, like, you know, decide to go for it and really give the Giants a full metal jacket that weekend.
Well, I think that's the whole thing. They get to buy after that. I think we've seen the teams that rest players, typically it doesn't work out very well for whatever reason.
Right.
And so I expect them to turn it on. I expect them to do everything that they have to within their powers to win every game that they play. I just think that that's the way they operate. That's the way they have operated, and I don't think it'll be anything different. I think that if they're 15-0, and I think they will be, I think they'll play their regulars.
Well, that I think that's going to be a major topic of conversation amongst the fans over the course of the next 7 weeks, even though, you know, those are the three most likely places where I think that they could stumble. I wonder, though, based on your conversations with not only folks around the league, but even those that cover the league as well, do you see anywhere, is there a hidden sort of a snake in the grass somewhere on down the line, and this includes, you know, Miami and New York in their own rights, that actually could cause this team a couple of problems?
Well, John, you know what, let's go down and look at it, and let me say before we do that, that the scariest games and the most challenging games are usually the ones that you're not expecting. There's a challenge that comes up and bites you out of nowhere.
That's why I ask, yeah, exactly.
Okay, at Buffalo, I mean, I could see the Bills playing a tough game, an inspired game like they did against the Cowboys. I don't see them winning it. I just don't. Philadelphia home, they're struggling too much. They got to go to Foxborough. Don't see it. Do you?
No.
Okay?
No.
Monday night. Baltimore's a dangerous team on the road, but that team is just, they're not playing good football right now. And I don't see them with the offensive capabilities to keep up. Down here in Baltimore, don't see it. Come home for three straight home games. Pittsburgh, Jets, Miami. Oh, they're not going to lose in Foxborough.
No.
So they go at the Giants. I mean, so they could lose any one of those games. Absolutely, John. But do I think they will? No. Does anybody in their right mind think they will? No.
Well, you brought up the point that the Patriots could be their own worst enemy, that if they lose the game, it could be a game that they lose more so than another team actually winning. Now, based on what we've seen with this team, by the way, I know that when we left our program here yesterday, just immediately after Randy Moss was named the AFC Player of the Week, hard to believe that that came, but I mean, Randy certainly deserved that. Do you see a problem area on this New England football team that actually could lead to something like that happening?
Okay, again, it's going to have to come from them. They're going to have to turn over the football in a game to lose the game. And unless that happens, they're not going to lose. I mean, if they win the turnover battle every game from this point on, I would be willing to stake my job on the fact that they will not lose this season. Okay? If the day comes that they lose a game, it will be because they lost the turnover battle. I promise you that.
Yeah, yeah.
If they don't lose the turnover battle, they will not lose this season. They will not. It cannot happen. So that's the only way a team's going to beat them. And if and when that's going to happen, we'll see. Now, you're asking me for another weakness. Yeah, I'm not convinced that all the linebackers can cover in pass coverage, but is that enough to get you beat on a single Sunday? I don't know about that either. But you're asking me for weaknesses on a team where there are very many or there are very few, if any. And I just don't see that at all. And to identify an area, that would be one I would identify for you in talking to some people. But again, it's like saying, yeah, okay, and I'm not going to date Jessica Alba because I think that she's got this dimple on her left cheek.
Exactly. Speaking of that, by the way, and not Jessica Alba in particular, but were you surprised that Dalis Thomas was the odd man out in that 4-2-5 defensive setup last week against the Colts?
Well, I think he's got some injury problems right now. In fact, I know he does. He's got some issues there that I think that they're trying to get him fully healthy, and he's not fully healthy, and I think that's holding him back some, in addition to the new transition of playing inside linebacker.
Right, exactly. Okay. Adam Schefter, of course, from NFL Network. He's the programs, in fact, that you might see him on around the league, and also NFL Total Access. we were just talking here in studio a couple of moments ago, Adam, about you know, how NFL Network is and what it does and how it provides the football fan with an obviously great venue. If you're a fan, that this is something that you'd want to have. What's it like working in Disneyland, so to speak?
You know, it's great. Well, first of all, I'm fortunate enough to work with some tremendously talented people, and you know, Marshall Faulk and Rich Eisen and Rod Woodson, people that I really like. They're good guys to work with, and again, it's football around the clock. And you know, I said that Dennis and Callahan this morning, show this morning, and I mean it. If you like football, then you got to get NFL Network. And I don't say that just because the last game of the year is the New England Patriots at the New York Giants on NFL Network.
That's right.
To see whether or not they go 16-0. I mean, you know, there's football programming on around the clock. That's just great stuff, great material for a football fan. So if you like football, NFL Network is for you. And if you don't, then you shouldn't be getting it. And I understand that.
Well, there is a spot you can go if you don't get NFL Network and you want to complain to your cable system, what have you. It's iwantnflnetwork.com, correct?
Yeah, or just call your cable provider. Tell them you want NFL Network. Or switch to DirecTV or Dish or another cable network that does provide it, because enough do.
Like I did.
Yeah, that's what I did. I switched to DirecTV. I get my NFL Network. I get all the Sunday ticket package. It's tremendous.
Absolutely. Adam, you know, I realize that we have to kind of go through the motions here over the next 7 weeks. If not New England, are there and or Indianapolis, who's capable of challenging here?
Well, you've named the culprits. I mean,
that's,
you know, we've gone through the regular season schedule. There's the postseason schedule. The postseason schedule, they'll have to win two games before they get to the Super Bowl. One will be probably against some upstart team like the Tennessee Titans, which I happen to think is a tough team that could give them a difficult battle because they're so physical and so tough defensively. But again, there aren't many teams I see staying with the Patriots this year.
Mm-hmm. Individually speaking, I think a lot of fans are also, you know, continuing to kind of surmise what we do about personnel moves in the offseason. You know, we can't enjoy this year. We have to kind of like go ahead and have angst over what's going to happen in the offseason. And at the top of that list is what to do about the, you know, the plethora of wide receivers that we have.
Uh-huh.
Randy Moss, Dante Stallworth, you keep a Kelly Washington around. What do you end up doing with all these guys? Welker signed for a couple of years.
Yeah, Welker's in the contract for a while. And
right.
I think that Moss, his deal is, I think he'll be back. I think that he doesn't want to go anywhere. Ultimately, they don't want him to go anywhere. The two sides will want to get that deal done, and I believe that they will. Dante Stallworth and Kelly Washington, I believe they have big roster bonus options, and they'll make the decision whether or not it is the right move to bring one of them back. And they're fairly deep at the position. Don't forget they have Chad Jackson. They just activated off the PUP list, so
right.
He's a former second-round pick. Wasn't
right.
A second-round pick for nothing. So these are decisions and problems that every franchise should be so fortunate to have to make.
You feel like one of those guys, if Moss does come back, and I agree with you in that respect, I do think that he'll find a way to come back. Will he come back for less money than he could get in the open market, do you think?
I believe so. I do believe that. I mean, you know, with him, he's been in Oakland, he's been in Minnesota, he's been in places that haven't won, that have struggled, and he doesn't like it. And it's important to him to know, look, as long as he stays in New England, and Bill Belichick is there, and Scott Pioli's there, and Tom Brady's there, he's always going to have the chance to have a winning team. Always. You know, you've got the right ownership group. I mean, where are you going? Where do you want to go that you're going to assure yourself of a winning season? Indianapolis? I mean, maybe. That'd be the only one that you could say, you know, year in, year out, they're going to be competitive. They got the quarterback, they got the coaches, they got the front office, but that's it.
Right. The other issue has to do, if we're looking at potential weak spots in this team, and I don't think this is a weak spot at all, but this is something that we talked about a little bit on our program here yesterday, was trying to improve the running back situation, because Lawrence Maroney is thought of, I think, as being maybe, I don't want to say fragile, but let's just say he's not as durable as some others. And with Sammy Morris being out for the year, now on injured reserve, there was the thought, I mean, rumor at least initially this week, that maybe a guy like Corey Dillon would be invited back, and mm-hmm. Bill Belichick put the kibosh on that one. We brought up the name here just in talking of Ricky Williams and whether or not the Dolphins would ever be willing to find a way to get something for nothing, because I don't think he'll ever return to Miami. Would a situation similar to this be the only way you think a guy like Williams comes back to the NFL?
No, I think he wants to play football. And I think that there are teams that will be interested, Tampa Bay, Green Bay, teams that will be interested in bringing him in there. He's a good running back still, I think. He could help somebody, I think. And I don't know that he's looking at it as New England or nothing. He's in the Boston area. We know that, right? He lives
Correct.
There now.
Correct, he does.
So I'm sure he'd be happy to stay there, but you'd have to ask the folks there in your building if they'd be interested in having him. And I don't know that they'd be as keen on having him as he would on having them.
Well, we've made a sort of a little bit of a history here over the last few years of taking guys who are thought to be, shall we say, different.
But, well, you can't make this into one flew over cuckoo's nest where you're rehabbing everybody in the NFL here. I mean, it's not a rehab clinic. That's not what it's about.
Oh, absolutely it is. Oh, okay. We rehab everybody here. Aren't you kidding? We rehab people's reputations here.
Okay, well, you've done a great job of it, but you can't do that. I mean, you can't take 53 miscreants and put them out there and expect that everybody's going to be just fine.
Oh, that's also true. No, we don't have 53 miscreants. I'm kind of going over the top with that. But that seems to be the general consensus, and so I'm thinking, well, you know what? If you put a guy like that in a right situation where he's surrounded by guys where he doesn't have to be the man and have all that pressure on him, which, as we all know, is something that Ricky struggled with, that might be a place where he could work.
Hey, listen, if I were running team, I would sign him. I know it sounds crazy. I like the guy as a person. I like him as a back. But every team's got to decide whether he's for him. And if the needs are great enough, then maybe they would carve out a roster spot. That's the other thing. Don't forget that it's not easy to get a roster spot. They're having a hard enough time getting guys like Eddie Jackson and Chad Jackson onto that roster. And to get one more roster spot, they'd have to give up somebody that they like.
Yeah, absolutely. And plus, you know, we all know that here, at least in New England, they like versatile players who can not only do a position but also contribute special teams or what have you, which is one of the reasons why Troy Brown got activated this week. Adam, before we let you go, what about this New England team has caused you to stop and say, wow, this year?
Just the whole team, the whole performance. I mean, anybody that has watched them this season, John, would watch them and say, this is an all-time team, one of the great teams that we're watching, and one of the great teams through 9 weeks, for whatever that's worth. They've got to do over the final seven and then in the playoffs. So, you know, it's hard to watch them and not think anything otherwise.
Well, it is. I think we kind of thought, at least initially, that this could be a special year. You kind of keep putting that off. You kind of keep pushing that back on the table a little bit. But the fact is that if you're ever going to jump on a bandwagon, this would probably be the time to do it, to follow a team that would have a chance. Now, if New England is able to go 16-0, where does this put them in the pantheon of all-time teams?
Right up there. I think it's harder to maintain where you're at an unblemished record in today's day and age with teams making changes the way that they do with free agency and the salary cap for parity. So to me, you know, depending on if they keep playing the way they do, they go down as the greatest team of all time.
Better than the Packers, better than the Cowboys, the 49ers, the Steelers.
I didn't have a chance to sit down and study the. I was a little boy during the Green Bay Packers' greatness. I can't say from studying tape that they're. But to me, in my lifetime, the best team of my lifetime, I would hope that'd be good enough for you, John.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Adam, thanks again for spending some time with us today. It's greatly appreciated.
My pleasure, John. Thanks for watching NFL Network.
You got it. And of course, if you want to hear more from Adam Schefter, and if you don't get NFL Network, you can go to iwantnflnetwork.com. To learn how you can receive the only year-round television channel dedicated to the sport of football. How about the fact that he says Randy Moss is coming back next year?
I think that's significant,
isn't it?
I've said from the beginning that they need to re-sign him, and people say, oh, he's just using the Patriots to get more money in the offseason. I disagree. I think he's where he wants to be. He's playing with one of the best quarterbacks of all time. Mm-hmm. He's never going to play with a quarterback as good as Tom Brady, unless he goes to Indianapolis. So, I mean, why wouldn't you want to stay here? Sacrifice a few mil, which he already has a bunch anyway, and why not stick around and have a career? Because I think if he keeps putting up numbers like this, he already has the talent to be considered the best receiver. He's the most talented receiver of all time. He's got the best skills of any receiver
better
who's ever
played. Better than Jerry Rice? Yes. Better than a Fred Biletnikoff?
Better skills.
Than a Don Maynard?
Yes. Better overall skills. He's faster. He can jump higher. He's taller. And he runs. For a guy who does all that, he's not just a speed guy. He runs very good routes. He can run over the middle. He can block. So, I mean, this guy, you have to consider him as one of the top two or three, if not the best wide receiver of all time. And I think if he stays here with Tom Brady, he puts up the numbers that will put him up there. The only thing is he missed those crucial years in the middle, so he might not have the numbers, but he definitely has the skill set.
Well, I would agree with the skill set, but I would also say that the one thing that I've noticed about Randy, that he doesn't do as well as some of the absolute top-notch, upper echelon, Jerry Rice types in the league, is I don't think he goes over the middle as well as some of those other guys. That doesn't mean that he can't. He did this last week against the Colts. We did see sort of a mixed reaction to that. He made one unbelievable one-handed grab, but then again, there were a couple there that I thought he could have had. He had his hands on that he didn't come up with. Again, the passes were leading him a little bit. He didn't come up with them. So I'm just saying that, you know, sometimes when you go over the middle, running the tougher routes humanizes some of the best athletes. The reason is because, A, tougher routes to run. There's not as much space in which to run your route. And, B,
you got
a guy like Bob Sanders lurking. I mean, there's impending doom getting ready to smack you upside the head. And that will humble anybody. I don't care how physically talented you are. That will humble anybody. So in that regard, I think that is the one area that, to me, kind of separates a guy from like Rice from a guy like Moss.
Well, he has a number of very good attributes, but the thing that stands out about Randy Moss is obviously his size, which Jerry Rice didn't have, which Chris Carter, other great receivers, didn't necessarily have. So he may be more willing to rely on his size. We know he has very great hands, but Jerry Rice obviously ran more sharp routes than Randy Moss. But you know he wants to be here because he's no longer considered a bad guy in the locker room. He's no longer disruptive. And his 12 receiving touchdowns this season, one shy of the number of receiving touchdowns he had in Oakland over a two-year period. Mm-hmm. So obviously he performs better when he's on a better team and when he's on a team where he doesn't have to open his mouth, where he doesn't become the story off the field, but he's rather the story on the field. So we know he wants to be here. There's really no reason why he would go anywhere else, and I'm sure he's willing to take a pay cut at this point.
Is it obvious to you guys that Randy Moss, and I guess we could also put Wes Welker and Dante Stallworth to a lesser status here, but Randy Moss in particular has made Tom Brady that much better a quarterback this season?
I think that's completely true. Like, with the weapons he has now, he's so much better than he has been. Like, throwing deep, with Randy Moss in the end zone, he can easily just toss it up, and with Randy Moss's size, he can just jump up and get it. His stats have been unbelievable this year with these weapons.
You know, the one thing that I, and I'm glad you brought that up, only because the one thing that I've noticed, and it's kind of like, you know, I've been carrying around this bag, and I don't know what to do with it, because I've had this little thing, and my thing here is that I don't think in a lot of ways Tom has been as pinpoint accurate this year.
Absolutely. Yeah.
As he
totally
has
agree.
Been in previous years. And the reason for that is because in previous years he's had to be.
He knows he has Randy Moss.
Exactly. And this year he has guys that can go get the ball. And so when you just take a look at any pass he throws to Moss. He tosses it up there and Moss goes and gets it. It doesn't hit him between the 8 and the 1. Or it doesn't hit him in the hands.
The prime example is during the Washington game. Both of the touchdown passes to Randy Moss, they should have been interceptions because they were poorly thrown balls.
Yeah.
And Randy Moss both defensive backs. He just jumped around him. He has his own verb now. People get mossed.
I've been getting emails from a graphic artist, by the way, that's been sending me catches. And Randy Moss's great catches, and then he puts "You've been mossed" across it, and it's got this kind of green ooze coming down on it, which is really funny, actually.
It's basically the new posterized. It's the posterized version of the NFL.
I agree.
But, I mean, it's like – I think Brady's getting a little careless in that sense because of the ball he threw. I don't know who he threw to, but it was the interception, the first one in the Colts game. If he throws that ball to Moss, that might be a catch. It was the throw that was intercepted at like the 1 yard line. I don't remember who it was to, but it was a ball that would have been caught by Moss. And if Moss is the receiver there,
right,
that might be a good ball to throw. But because it wasn't Moss, I think it was Stallworth. Because it wasn't Moss, it's a terrible ball, and it gets picked.
Yeah.
So that's been the case all year. The balls like that, he throws to Moss, get caught, he looks like a hero.
Yeah, it was Stallworth.
He doesn't throw to Moss.
He just kind of jumped on the wrong foot, I thought, and it didn't have it timed out. But obviously Dante's not the physical receiver that Randy is. And you're right, on that play, had it been Moss, my guess is at worst it probably been an incompletion.
Even the one-handed catch this week, like, that wasn't a great pass, but Moss just picked it out of the air.
Right.
It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
I tell you what, he has been accurate to Wes Welker, though.
Yeah.
He's been throwing the ball. He's been hitting Welker right in the numbers.
I would also argue that those routes that Welker runs are more conducive to accurate passes.
Absolutely.
Because he's obviously running 7 and 8 yard outs, and he's curling over the middle. Now, the thing that makes Welker so incredibly valuable is because not only because he's got great hands, because he's running those routes and finds a way to get open on those short routes, which is sometimes tough to do. but we've used this analogy a couple of times. He runs low to the ground. And so because he's so low to the ground, the throw comes in at an angle where it's almost darn near impossible for a defensive back or a linebacker in this particular instance to make a play, number one. And number two, it makes him tough to tackle because he's already a smallish guy anyway, but he's incredibly quick. He's down on the ground. I mean, he runs low, so he's hard to bring down. That's what makes him more valuable, I think, than anything else.
And I think one of the other things that makes him incredibly valuable is the fact he has a nose for the first down marker in the sense that a lot of wide receivers,
smart.
A lot of wide receivers will cut off their curl routes or the out routes right at the first down marker. So if they have to come back to the ball or they get tackled, they're actually short of the first down. Whereas Welker will run his route 2 to 3 yards past the first down marker. So when he catches it, he can still come back to the football and protect the ball and still be tackled past the first down marker. So that's a very, very valuable thing, especially for a possession receiver like Wes Welker. You need to have a nose. You need to know where you are on the football field at all times, and I think he has a great knowledge and a great intelligence of where he is on the football field every single route.
I think that, you know, it was almost one of those things. I actually wanted to talk about this a couple of weeks ago, and I'm thinking, you know, it's really a kind of a small thing to go to. Well, that maybe be a good bye week topic. Well, now that we're here in the bye week, I wanted to bring that up, and I'm glad you did, because I do think that he hasn't had to be Brady, hasn't had to be as accurate, simply because of the talent of the receivers that he has had. Now, he's plenty accurate. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that he's a worse quarterback. But the fact is that he's able to take chances on passes that in previous years he could not take a chance with for fear that it would be picked off, like what we saw happen against, you know, the pass that was intended for Stallworth this last week. You know, he's got receivers that will go get it as opposed to receivers whom he had to lay it in their hands.
And I think that makes the debate between who's a better quarterback, Manning or Brady. Finally,
it's okay, it's only radio.
Yeah, I know. You can validate the argument now, because now Brady has the weapons that Manning used to have. And Manning still, to an extent, has the same weapons. One of them is just hurt right now. Mm-hmm. Manning has a better tight end still. And I think, I don't necessarily think that his top two wide receivers are better than
with a healthy Benjamin Watson against Dallas Clark, I would probably at least initially think that Clark would be a better blocking tight end. Certainly as good catching. There's no way he has the speed Watson.
No way.
Has.
But he runs.
No way.
But he's a very good route runner, which as a tight end you need to be, unless you have Ben Watson's speed. But Watson runs great routes too. The point is, Dallas Clark is a top tier tight end in the league, especially in pass catching.
And I thought Rodney Harrison did a great job of shadowing him this weekend, allowing him just two catches. That was a huge factor, I think, overall with the Patriots having success when they come out in the nickel package on defense and making sure that, you know, Clark had a guy assigned to him at all times.
I've been very impressed by the amount of time that Brady has had in the pocket too.
Yeah, the offensive line's been great.
They've been tremendous. Yeah. And just imagine what it would be like if they had a consistent running back at this point. Maroney's been injured. Sammy Morris is injured at this point. Kevin Folk has been the most consistent running back. So if they had a healthy Maroney and they had a running game established game in and game out, the defense would have to prepare for that even more. Right now, a defense can prepare for the Patriots and try to stop the passing game, have 4 or 5 defensive backs.
Which nobody yet has been able to do.
Yep.
Nobody yet has been able to do. You're right. But, I mean, it's kind of like we're going to see a lot more of that cover, too, where the defenses are going to umbrella out. They're going to try to take away the sideline routes and the deep routes, and they're going to force the Patriots throw underneath. And I've said all along, I said this back week one, week two, I said the one way that you're going to be able to defend this team is you're going to have to, number one, take away the deep routes so Moss won't kill you. And number two, you're going to have to get up on the line of scrimmage, and you're going to have to be physical with guys like Welker and Stallworth. And if it's Benjamin Watson, the tight end, then Benjamin Watson coming off the line. You're going to have to literally pound them into the ground. You're going to have to do to the Patriots what the Patriots did to the Colts back in 2003 and to the Rams in the 2001-2002 Super Bowl, and that is be physical with those receivers and allow and knock them off of their roots, because a lot of it is predicated on timing, and I think that's the only way you have a chance.
And I think that's one thing that I wish Adam kind of would have talked about more, is that you asked him about how a team could beat the Patriots, and I think that's exactly what they need to do. You pretty much have to, instead of putting 8 guys in the box like a lot of teams do if you're trying to stop the run, you put as little guys in the box as possible and try to make them run the ball, because I don't think they have that power back, especially now that Sammy Morris is out, that can pound it in. I like Lawrence Maroney. I think he's a good back, but I don't know if he can be a very good every day, every down back in this league. He doesn't run the ball in between the tackles as well as I would like a consistent running back to do.
I think most fans would agree with you too.
He's more of a Reggie Bush type. Although he's not as fast, probably doesn't have the athleticism, but he's more of a Reggie Bush type back where you want to use him. You might want to use him on sweeps and swing passes, maybe screens out of the backfield. You don't really want to run him in between the tackles. And I think they need to, especially now that Sammy Morris is gone, Corey Dillon would have been a great addition, but now we know that that's not going to happen.
We're going to solve this problem next year in April for the NFL
McFadden.
Draft. Yes. We're going to solve that problem with San Francisco's pick.
We're going to get a top five pick.
Yeah, thank you for that, Elias. We're going to solve that problem. We're going to draft Darren McFadden next year, and it's all over.
The thing is, do you trade Maroney, too? Because I think a team...
No, what the hell? Keep them both.
I don't know, though. I think a team like... That's true. I mean, it's not a bad idea. I think you could get good value for Maroney, too, and a team who has just an inside runner who's looking for that outside back, maybe like a Cleveland to some extent, because they do have Jamal Lewis, but he's a quick back, but he's getting older and he's more of a bruiser than he used to be. Maybe they're looking for a guy like Maroney who can take it around the corner. You could get some good value from Maroney.
I'm not going to give up the ship on a guy like Maroney, because I think we've seen his former running mate for a year at Minnesota, Marion Barber, develop into what I think right now is one of the toughest running backs in the NFL. Now, with all due respect to Adrian Peterson, who may be the best running back in the NFL right now. Pains me to say that because he went to Oklahoma naturally. but he is. I mean, 296,
oh,
please.
Yeah.
That's pretty hard. And teams are gearing up to stop him, and he's still.
Because they have
still
no
doing
passing
what he's doing,
game whatsoever.
They don't have a quarterback.
Oh,
so what he's doing is really remarkable. It's phenomenal this year, and he's probably one of the best untold stories outside of New England, what Adrian Peterson is doing for Minnesota. But with all due respect, Marion Barber, for my money, is as tough between the tackles with the ability to stop and move and cut to the outside and utilize speed. With that kind of a combination, is any back I've seen in a long, long time. I mean, he's tough to bring down. He runs hard. He has, reckless abandon for his body. I mean, he's a tough guy. And so because he comes from that, Maroney, I think, comes from that same kind of mold. Number one, I can't believe now that Glenn Mason wasn't fired earlier at Minnesota than he was if he had those two guys in the same backfield together for a year. Wow. Can you imagine? I'd have run the ball 50 times a game with those guys.
I wouldn't have passed the ball at all.
How
Never.
Did Minnesota not win the Big Ten is what I want to know.
Because they have Ohio State.
Okay, well, see that. There you go. Answer question answered
exactly.
Right there. But the fact is that I think Maroney can develop. But I think what most people are concerned about is his durability.
Yep. And that's part of it, too, is that that's part of the durability question is the fact that if he runs through the tackles, he's going to be more apt to get hurt. And that's add that all together. That spells trouble for me. I like him as a running back. But that's the biggest thing, is that he's not durable enough. And if the more you run in between the tackles, the bigger risk that you're going to get hurt.
So you dare the Patriots to run the ball. And that's why I think this Indianapolis defense this last weekend is actually a great matchup for the Colts against the Patriots. Number one, because they've got good speed on the ends. Okay, and we saw that. We've seen that with Freeney and everybody. And number two, they've got good speed in the linebacking core. So if you stack up on the secondary to help slow down the passing game, you ask the Patriots to run, but you're able to overcome some of the gaps in the middle of the field because of the speed of your linebacking core.
And you forget, too, that they had some injured linebackers.
They did have some injured linebackers. So
that would have made a big difference.
It would have made I think it could have, arguably could have turned the table in their favor. Of course, we'll never know. I mean, you never know. But what I will say is that when the game comes back here, if it does indeed come back here in January for the AFC Championship, and is the Colts then, if the Colts are completely healthy, and I hope that they are, because the one thing you don't want is people to, make excuses or leave excuses out there on the table. You want to beat a team when you were at full strength. Now, the Patriots are also missing a couple of guys that they probably could have used as well, and they certainly didn't have Watson full tilt healthy, and Sammy Morris, they were missing him, and obviously he would have been a big factor, I think, overall, especially having it. So you want teams to be healthy, but I don't think coming here is going to be as daunting a task for the Colts as people would think it might be, especially since Colts have won the last two times that they've played here.
I think it's safe to say that a football game in January in New England can present a number of roadblocks, and the Patriots are going to need a running game at that point because who knows what the weather is going to be like. You need to establish that ground game. And I like Maroney in a Pats uniform long term because he fills the mold of kind of this new trend of running back in the NFL. Steven Jackson, Jamal Lewis, big physical guys that don't necessarily run low to the ground, aren't necessarily that quick, but power their way ahead for yards. Good guys to have in there in third down situations where you need to pick up a first down. So I think they need to keep him around because he's big, he's strong, and if he can stay healthy, his potential to be a guy like Steven Jackson, who's also been injured. But if you're healthy, you're big and can run between the tackles, there's endless possibilities in this league.
I think Elias brings up a good point about the Patriots' offensive scheme versus the Colts' offensive scheme. And if the game does come back here for the AFC Championship game or whatever, I think the Colts are actually a better team built for New England weather than the Patriots are. They have a good tough runner, Joseph Addai, who if they need to, they showed it in the first half of this game. Mm-hmm. They can rely on Joseph Addai to carry that team. They don't need Peyton Manning to throw for 450 yards anymore, which a couple years ago when they played in here and it was snowing or whatever, they needed Manning because they didn't have a running game, or they had Edge, but he wasn't at full tilt like he at some points. They needed him to throw for 350, 400 yards, and he couldn't do it in this kind of weather. Now this team is built for January football in New England. It's almost like the teams have switched roles, and the Patriots are the team that would be great in a dome, and the Colts would be great in New England weather.
Funny how that works, right?
It's awesome.
It's a great day for us here in the studio. We have Elias, we have Zach, and we have Bethany, who are sports radio students from Emerson College in Boston, talk a little football, and we want to make sure that you're part of the conversation. So make sure you send us your emails, webradio@patriots.com. webradio@patriots.com. You can also call in the program as normal, 508-543-7482. Again, the area code 508-543-7482. There's no real question of the day today. Normally, I kind of tee everybody up with an email question of the day, and we go off on a particular topic. And today is one of those days. This happens about two or three times a year. Because obviously, you know, when you go through 17 weeks and do this all the time, it's kind of like, God, what do we talk about today? Well, we usually have the opposing team to talk about. Bye weeks are always awful. Everybody here in the stadium loves the bye week, except me. Because then it's kind of like, all right, so what are we talking about? And then I realize that, you know, this gives people, I think, who normally listen to this program, a chance to maybe catch up on things. Well, the Patriots are off this week, so there's no need to check in with the playbook and no need to, you know, converse and everything. Well, that's not necessarily the case. Because we do kind of take stock of where we are at the, you know, little past the midway point of the season, number one. And number two, like Adam Schefter told us, we're on the precipice of something that, you know, may never, ever, ever be done again in NFL history if the Patriots are able to run this table, which he says they will. And if you didn't hear him just a short while ago here in the program, he said he would basically wager his job at NFL Network.
That's a bold statement.
He would wager
his job at NFL Network.
I knew you would. I figured you'd be right at the front of the list, Zach.
Exactly.
He wagered his job at NFL Network that the Patriots will go 16-0. I mean, that's how confident he is. And I don't know who he's going to actually wager that job with, but that's another thing, you know. Fact is that he's confident that the Patriots will run the table.
I mean, I'm not far behind him, really. They don't have an extremely tough schedule on the way out. I mean, they have the Giants, but the Giants are in the NFC. We don't really know what's coming out of the NFC.
The Giants haven't beaten anybody.
Exactly.
In the last 4 weeks, it's been Miami, Atlanta, the 49ers, and the Jets. Four horrible teams. So they haven't shown me much.
Keep in mind, the Giants were 6-2 in the midway point last year and finished 2-6.
And you never know what you're going to get out of Eli Manning. I don't care what anybody says. He's still not there yet as an NFL quarterback. He still makes way too many mistakes. I've never been high on this guy, and I'm not going to be high on it until he proves it.
Bethany's smirking on that one. She's smirking. I saw that. Saw that. You're not a big Eli fan, huh?
No, not at all. I agree with him.
What in particular about him bothers you?
I don't know. I just don't think he's as great a quarterback as he could be. He does make way too many mistakes.
Why do you think that is?
I have no idea.
I honestly think that he tries too hard sometimes.
To be his brother.
Yeah. To be his brother. And I don't think he is his brother. He's a good quarterback.
He's not even close to his brother.
But he's not even, you're right, he's not even close to his brother. And I think part of the problem is the perception that he is, you know, Peyton Jr.
And it gets magnified because of the fact that he's in New York.
See, that's where I thought the biggest mistake came. You know, when he was drafted by San Diego, I'm thinking, you know what, or at least they thought they were going to draft, San Diego was going to take him with the first pick, and he's like, no, we're not going to San Diego.
Boy, did he make a mistake, too.
Exactly! That would have been the perfect spot for him.
LT in San Diego, beautiful weather all the year round.
It would have been the perfect spot for him because the media glare would have been off of him. But going to New York, because he perceived, I guess, that it would be extra advertising dollars out there for him, I just couldn't think of a worse spot for him to be.
Oh man, it's not a good spot for him at all.
I don't think Daddy Archie really set him up very well.
Everybody expected him to be Peyton when he got there. Everybody, but if you know anything about the NFL and about football, you knew he wasn't going to be. If you watched him at Ole Miss, you knew he wasn't going to be Peyton. He was. He's not. He's a good quarterback, but
he's not a good quarterback. He's not Peyton.
No, not even close.
And that's I think the biggest thing that he's got to overcome is the fact that, you know, oh well, he's a Manning, so he's got to be Peyton, or at the very least, he's got to be his dad, who is a very good pro quarterback on some very lousy New Orleans Saints teams.
And what a poor decision to make to start your career. Chargers would have been a great fit. But you gave him a little leeway in the first couple of years. You said, "Oh well, they threw him right into the mix right away. He's a starting quarterback in his first year. Let's give him a little time to grow."
Mm-hmm.
So the fans gave him the benefit of the doubt, and I'm sure the New York media did as well. But now, as he progresses and gets into his career a little bit, it seems like his improvement has kind of slowed down, has diminished, and right now, a few years in, 3-4 years into an NFL career as a quarterback, you need to be taking your team into the playoffs if you're going to have any legacy whatsoever. We need to see improvement from him, and we haven't seen that.
And there's another reason why the move that he made, it was a completely wrong move, because it makes him look like a jerk. He's like, I'm a rookie coming into this league. He thought he was bigger than any team in the NFL. He could choose where he wanted to go. I think that made him look like a jerk around the league with the fans, with other players, especially with the Chargers. I mean, a lot of people had no respect for him coming out of the college just because of the fact that he basically chose where he wanted to play.
Sure.
And that's a big mistake in and of itself. I think if he ever reaches free agency and the Giants decide they don't want to re-sign him, or if he doesn't want to stay in New York, he's going to have a tough time signing somewhere else. Because of what he did, and that almost looks like it's just a big jerk, basically.
Putting it simply, yeah. Right? What about some emails? You guys want to do a couple?
Absolutely.
All right, webradio@patriots.com is the email address. We're really just kind of taking stock of things here after Week 9. Patriots have the week off. They'll return here to the stadium on Monday to begin preparations for the next game, which will be at Buffalo the following weekend. You know, if you have some questions for our esteemed panel here, I think that would be very appropriate. We can test a little football knowledge from Elias and Zach and Bethany today as well. Because as we mentioned in the opening of the show, they're all, I would say, would you call yourself a diehard Patriots fan?
I am.
Absolutely.
Bethany, she jumps right in with that one. Okay. I mean, I realize Elias isn't because he grew up on the West Coast, but you're a diehard football fan.
Of course.
All right. Is football your favorite sport?
Nope.
Well, I know you play baseball, Zach. Yeah. So I mean, I understand that.
But I love football. But baseball is what I've. It's the reason I came to Emerson. It's the reason I wanted to do journalism. I always thought I wanted to be a baseball guy. I always thought I wanted to replace Peter Gammons as that guy in baseball.
Nice.
But I've realized that there's I really do have a passion for football as well. So it's football is definitely a close second, but baseball takes the cake.
Bethany, now you have to admit, females in football, they go together a little, and more so in recent years. But what made you decide this is something you thought you'd like to try?
I've always loved football. Patriots, I would even say I like the Patriots better than the Red Sox, which is huge. But,
And
like, I feel like you're seeing more and more females with roles in reporting on football, I think, more than anything else.
Could you see yourself in a role like that someday?
I would hope so. Bonnie Bernstein on the sidelines.
See, there you go. Absolutely. Well, you're already nicer than Bonnie, so I can tell you that right now. She's not listening anyway.
Elias, hey, it's Bonnie Bernstein.
Yeah, see, there you go. She's been around every once in a while, I know. Now, are you a football first guy, or what's the favorite sport?
Baseball first. Okay. My parents basically made that decision for me, going to 30-plus Giants games every summer in San Francisco, and only a couple Niners games during the regular season. So that decision was made. And someone who wants to get into broadcasting as well, I've had a lot of great broadcasters to look up to in baseball. John Miller, of course, in San Francisco.
Great ones,
and other great guys, of course, Vin Scully, Harry Callis, Bob Uecker. In football, there are great broadcasters. I love Dick Enberg and look up to him tremendously. But
don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
That's right. But baseball first.
Yeah, baseball first. Good. I want our listeners, I want our fan base here, I want them to test you guys on your overall knowledge of the team and such, you know. So you don't have any confidence in yourself. You got to have confidence in yourself. That's why you're in here today, because you got confidence you can do the job. So we're basically just taking stock of where the Patriots are through 9 weeks, looking ahead a little bit, not only to Buffalo, but on down the line, potential pitfalls, pratfalls, and really where this team might be lacking and whether or not it's going to be enough of an Achilles heel to cause them, to keep them perhaps from going 16-0. We've talked a little about the running game in particular. We've talked a little bit about the linebackers and whether or not they might not be exactly what you're looking for in coverage. And Adam Schefter brought that up a little bit earlier. Those are a couple of things. So that's really what we have on the table here. Webradio at Patriots.com. Russell Baxter from ESPN will join us here in about 5 or 10 minutes. Let's start it off with Jeff in Bartlett, who says, now that Chad Jackson has been activated and has been Randy Moss's mentoring project, will he get a chance, do you think, at Gaffney's four-receiver spot, or will it be strictly a fifth receiver? Washington plays enough on special teams that I don't expect him to see much as a receiver, Kelly Washington. But so far as I know, Jackson plays nothing but wideout. How has he looked in practice and the limited looks they've been able to get? Have you seen Moss working with him? I can't think that working so closely with Randy Moss would do anything but help him, and I'm hoping he's able to make an impact in the second half. I can tell you that from the limited number of practices that they allow us even to get in and see, that the receivers are all together, but there doesn't seem to be any real special attention that Randy has paid to Chad. I know that they've conversed because they have to. You know, when you're in groups, you know, they're always talking, they're always doing this and that. But has he, like, pulled him out of a pile and showed him how to do something? Not really. And a lot of that is because I don't know that that's the role that Randy is really, A, equipped to fulfill, number one. And number two, I don't know how receptive Chad would even be to that. But what are your thoughts on Chad Jackson and whether or not he should, you know, maybe be given that opportunity?
I don't know if he'll get that chance this year, but definitely down the road. The Patriots think very highly of him. Obviously, they gave away two picks to move up and take Jackson in the draft. So obviously, he's going to get a chance sometime down the road. But this year, the Patriots have seen that their wide receiving core has been able to get the job done, obviously, with the big three and Gaffney as a fourth wideout. So I don't know if Jackson's going to see time this year, but there's no doubt the Patriots love this guy, and he's going to develop in the organization.
Right. Yeah, he's got the skill set to be a very, very good wide receiver. I think he's a quick guy, and he's also big and strong. I don't know much about Kelly Washington. We haven't seen him play a whole lot this year, but I think they want to try and get Chad in as much as possible. I would imagine get him some reps this year, even if he doesn't play a whole lot, doesn't get a lot of catches this year. They can maybe. They don't have to spend as much money. Maybe they don't have to cut Stallworth next year and throw Jackson into that role. Just something to look at. I know they're very money conscious around here, so that might be something to look at. They can save a few bucks. Maybe cut Stallworth, throw Jackson into the mix next year because he's got the skill set to do it.
I just don't see him really becoming a factor this year.
Not at all.
I think you never know, like with last year, because like I think of all the receivers last year, Gaffney probably wouldn't have been my first choice of the ones that they would have kept for this year. So I think you never really know.
And yet Gaffney actually may have been, you know, a savior of sorts last year.
Oh, yeah, definitely in the playoffs.
Yeah. So good stuff. All right, next. Alex says, everybody's talking about the Patriots going 16-0, and that's okay, but why didn't anybody talk about the Colts of the last few seasons going 16-0? I've never wanted them to go the distance. I'm just wondering, what do the 2007 Patriots have that the Colts of the last few seasons didn't have?
Above average to very good defense.
Okay.
That's pretty much what it is. That's pretty much what it comes down to. The Colts offense, when they started a 13-0, when they've had their very good seasons the last couple of years, they haven't had the defense, the overall good defense, team defense, like the Pats have had the last 5 years. And that's the biggest thing. They've had an offense that has been just as good, if not better, than this one, the Pats offense this year. But it comes down to the defense.
I would agree. By the way, he says, personally, I think we'll go 16-0, but we need to fix some things in order to do that. Our defense has to get better at stopping the run. Our offense has to run the ball better, kind of what we've been talking about. This is Alex from Munich, Germany. By the way, he says, P.S., shut up Don Shula. And I'm glad he said that because, honestly, I want to go back to the story I mentioned off the top of the program. I heard Don Shula on Mike and Mike in the Morning on ESPN, for those that may not have heard it. And they asked him, point out what Gary Myers in the New York Daily News says Shula said, which was that they should put an asterisk by the Patriots if they go 16-0. Well, first of all, he was never quoted in that article as saying that, number one. They asked him point blank, do you think the Patriots should have an asterisk by their record if they go 16-0 in the regular season? And his answer was, that's not for me to decide.
So he retracted that right away, basically, is what he was saying.
Well, he did retract it, but he never really said it to begin with, number one. And number two, I found his response of, that's not for me to decide, to be a little curious as well. If he really wanted to, you know, get back on level square one, he would have said no.
And especially, this is something we've been talking about all week. And I hadn't heard from Shula for years in the public spotlight.
Except for those Nutrisystem commercials, right?
Right. Yeah. He comes out of the woodwork at the right time, except for when he pops a bottle of champagne after the last undefeated team loses.
Right, exactly. I just thought that was curious. And then, they did a good job of pressing him on it. But the one thing that they did not do, and this is where I don't think our Mike and Mike boys on the network level here did their homework. You know, I'm always after you to do your homework, right? Do your journalism, right? They didn't do this today. Nobody brought up the fact, and Jim Litke, I think I even brought the article with me. It was an Associated Press article. Pardon me while I look in my stuff here, because I did. I brought it with me. Good thing they didn't have any drink in it, right? All right. I want to read just an excerpt from an Associated Press article is written by Jim Litke, who's covered the NFL for several years now. And when I read it this morning, I'm thinking, God, this hits the nail on the head. This absolutely does. So I got to give him full credit for the article here. He says, name a coach an NFL team caught cheating and then forced to give up a first-round pick only to gain a measure of revenge by roughing up an opponent or two en route to a perfect season Super Bowl title. Obviously, the Patriots fit that bill, right? How about Don Shula's 72 Dolphins?
I read that article, too.
You saw that?
Yep.
Okay. It hits, I mean, it's nail exactly, on the head
yeah.
stuff, right? All right. The parallels aren't exact. Since the Dolphins team is already in the record book and these Patriots are only halfway through, but Shula couldn't be bothered with distractions earlier this week when he suggested an asterisk would be appropriate. His quote to the New York Daily News was, "The Spygate thing has diminished what they've accomplished. You would hate to have that attached to your accomplishments, but they've got it." That was his quote, which, of course, he backtracked on this morning on ESPN Radio by saying, "That's not for me to decide." But that was his answer, which is still not an unequivocal, no, I don't think they should have an asterisk. He's still leaving some wiggle room there if you read between the lines, which is what I love to do in these interviews, right? Now, keep in mind, okay, and this Jim Litke points this out here. He says, if Shula believes that, if he really believes that maybe they should have this asterisk, then he ought to negotiate a twofer and paste the other asterisk next to his own undefeated team. He was still the coach of the Baltimore Colts at the end of the 1969 season, when then-Miami owner Joe Robbie approached him and signed Shula to a contract. The NFL charged the Dolphins with tampering and awarded their first-round pick to the Colts. Didn't know that, did you? Undaunted, Miami reached the Super Bowl in 1971, rebounding from a loss to the Dallas Cowboys by winning the next two, including the perfect 17-0 campaign. So it's not exactly parallel, but there are a lot of similarities between what the Patriots are going through this year and what Shula's Dolphins went through at that time.
And that proves that this asterisk will not go down in the history books because nobody remembers this. He compared the Patriots this year to Barry Bonds, which I took very personally since I'm a Bonds fan, but that's beside the point.
I didn't know we had any Bonds fans left.
Not on this coast.
Especially on the East Coast.
Exactly.
But with Bonds, there may be an asterisk, obviously, in hard copy form in the Hall of Fame on that baseball. But that's only because this is on a hard record. The Spygate thing, this running up the score, this is not a record. This is nothing that's going to go down in the record books. When you look back in the season in hindsight, you're going to say the Patriots went 16-0. They had an outstanding team, and nobody is going to mention any of these controversies.
Oh, I disagree. I think when you look back at the 2007 Patriots and the 2008 Super Bowl champions, which was the
40 years from now,
I say absolutely. I think you look back and you think about the controversy that they went through. Because I know it's not. I don't think it's a big deal. I don't think it helped them win Super Bowls and win games. I think they could have won Super Bowls and won games without this, but I think why would they do it if it didn't help at all? So you have to at least say that you have to at least think about it and mention it when you mention this year's team and even the last couple of years' team. So I'm not saying that it defines these teams because it doesn't, but you have to at least it comes up somewhere in the conversation, not necessarily at the beginning, maybe towards the tail end, but you have to at least talk about it when you talk about these teams.
But Zach, did you know this about the Dolphins? Did you know this about Shula?
Absolutely
back
not. But
in the early 70s?
I think that's a little bit different in the sense that nothing that they did actually helped them on the field. But Shula didn't do anything that actually helped them on the field. This is something that tangibly helped them win ball games, and I don't know if it was a big help, but it helped them in some way. Nothing that the Dolphins did or Shula did actually helped the Dolphins win.
But I think it's safe to say, without any camera incident, the Patriots still would be where they're at at this point in the season. their margin of victory has been so great that I don't think it had any sort of monumental impact whatsoever.
Absolutely. I said that before. I think they would have won. I don't think any of the outcomes changed. I think they would have won their Super Bowls. I think they would have won all the games. It's just a simple matter of why would they do it if it didn't help out to some degree. I'm not saying it was the make or break thing that helped them win Super Bowls and win ball games, but why do it if it doesn't help you at all? That's what I'm saying.
Do you think it'll just be brought up about this season or their past three Super Bowl wins as well? Because clearly it was just the beginning of this season.
I mean, I think it'll come up definitely for this season because it happened this season, but you have to at least they can't have just started this in week one of the 2007 season. It had to have been going on for at least a year or so. You have to bring it up definitely in this year's conversation, and maybe because if you talk about this year, if they win the Super Bowl this year, if the 2007 Patriots come up, the 2001 through 2007 Patriots come up because it's pretty much one entity.
Okay.
So when you talk about this team, you talk about the whole entity, and you talk about that scandal, if you want to call it that, as one. And I do think it comes up because it's one of the bigger things that has come up in football in recent history.
I just don't think 40 years from now this is something you're going to remember. You look at this Dolphins team, I think it's jealousy coming from Shula at this point.
I don't disagree.
Because if you look at the 72 Dolphins, Bob Greasy went down in the fifth week of the season. They basically went undefeated with a backup quarterback and relied strictly on their running game. A very different type of team than what the Patriots have right now. And their margin of victory in their games in 1972 was nothing close to what the Patriots have done this year. A lot of very close games. So even though they went wire to wire and won the Super Bowl, that's a very thin argument.
Right.
It's clear to me that the Patriots are a much better team this year.
I was just disappointed overall, getting back to the original premise here, I was disappointed overall that part of the conversation wasn't brought up in the discussion this morning, because I would like to have had Shula put on the spot about, you know, well, what happened with you back in 69 and when you went from Baltimore to Miami. I would have liked to have heard that squirm, because I think that would have been an audible squirm on the radio. That
Absolutely.
Was the only thing that I thought that would have been appropriate. All right, it is a little past. Thank you very much. A little past 3 p.m. Eastern time on a Thursday, which means Russell Baxter, NFL research coordinator for ESPN, joined us on the program Inside Patriots Playbook. Russell, I want you to say hello to Elias, to Zach, and to Bethany, who are three of my star students in my sports radio class at Emerson College.
What's the matter? Jan, Cindy, and Greg weren't available?
Good one.
You're killing us, Russell.
I like that. That's pretty good. I like that. How are you today,
Gang.
Russell?
How are you?
Excellent.
Hello to everyone. I hope you know what a class individual you're dealing with Mr. Rook.
Oh, God.
I say that with all sincerity.
Oh, God.
Now, of course, I didn't say what class.
Exactly. That's right. I know. Here we go. I'll take care of you when I get to Bristol next time. So, you know, hey, we kind of had a little bit of a buzz going on around here, even though we know that it's the bye week for us. But nevertheless, did Super Bowl 41.5 live up to your advanced billing?
Well, I think it definitely did. I mean, it certainly was enjoyed by most of the country, it seems like. And it did, because it was the chess match I thought it would be. And it was interesting, even though the Colts were – there are a lot of different ways to look at it. The Colts were down a few rooks and pawns, and did what they could, but the Patriots made the plays when they had to. The Colts didn't make the plays when they should have.
Right.
Missed opportunity. I think there's nothing better to me than a flawed football game. I want to see turnovers. Okay, I want to see good execution.
Unless it's the team you're rooting. Unless it's the team you're rooting for, Russell.
Excuse me.
I said, unless it's the team you're rooting for.
Well, absolutely. But, I mean, to me, the best part about football, to me,
right.
I've said this 100 times, is that the ball's not round, and it can do funny things. That's
yeah.
That is the most intriguing thing about the game. And, you know, we were sitting there watching the game on Sunday, the first half. Joseph Addai takes a short pass. I hear at least one person in the room scream, "Run out of bounds!"
Mm-hmm.
Well, he doesn't. And Joseph Addai has a half to remember. He outgains the Patriots by himself in the first half. And yet the Colts never really capitalized on all the opportunities to drop the Reggie Wayne pass, and then they let Tom Brady do what he does best. The cool, precise, accurate, it's what hallmarked his entire career. It's really what hallmarked him in the fourth quarter, making the big plays when he had to. and just getting the contributions from everybody. I mean, it looked like Randy Moss was not having a great day, even though he caught the touchdown pass in the fourth quarter, but then he makes the big 50-plus yard reception. Wes Welker, I thought, was the real key to what he did, because it wasn't just as a receiver. It was also as a return artist. And if there is one fatal flaw that the Colts remain, is that their kick coverage is not that great. Listen, the opening kickoff of the Super Bowl, they won the Super Bowl but gave up a kick return on the opening kickoff, which had never happened before.
Right.
It will be interesting to see if these teams do play again, if and when they play again, what round it would be. And unlike other years, if the game, well, you know, if the game is in Foxborough, and I don't like to project because we got a long, long way to go. Things can happen and stuff. But I think the thing I like the most is these teams, it's not going to be a game where if it's outdoors, the Colts are going to be shriveling up and being a team that can't deal with the weather. They were a different style of football team than they were a couple of years ago. I've often said on this program how the teams have switched identities.
Right.
And the thing I think that was the beauty of what New England did Sunday is they, for the most part this year, have been the 2004 Colts. And for the most part, the Colts have been the 2004 Patriots. But when they needed it most, last Sunday, the Patriots were the 2004 Patriots again.
That's very true. It's a good analogy, and I think it's appropriate in this regard. We've also spent a lot of time over the last couple of days anyway just trying to figure out now if there is going to be a stumbling block, where it might come, and what aspect of this football team might be potentially an Achilles heel. Do you have any newer thoughts on that in light of what you saw last Sunday against the Colts?
Well, I think a lot of the question marks to me will depend on how the defense holds up. There's no mistaking the fact that the Patriots, even though they have savvy veteran players, it's a long season. And people are not playing the same way in September than they are necessarily in November and December. Now, the beauty of the Patriots is they're also a very deep football team. So they don't necessarily need their frontline guys to be continuously on the field. It's not the way they play anyway.
Mm-hmm.
They do such a good job of mixing things up and so on. I believe they played a vast majority of this game in a 4-2-5 alignment.
They did.
Which is, it's always something different with them. They are the Rosanna Dana of the NFL, but I mean that in a positive way. So you never know what to predict from them. And I think that's why they've been the most intelligent football team in this league the last few years and why they've had the run that they've had. But it is now, we are now going to hear the constant chimes of, and they are favored this week, by the way, the Patriots, even though they are off.
By double digits, right?
Constant chime. I thought when the schedule first came out, and I got to be honest with you, John, there's nothing I dread more than talking about the NFL schedule in the context of, like, college football.
Mm-hmm.
Because St. Leo's, Our Lady of Perpetual Motion, and Gardner Webb, who beat Kentucky last night,
I know,
aren't on your schedule, okay?
That's right.
But I haven't done the math on this yet, but I would pose this question to Bill Belichick, okay? And I noticed this in April when we did our two-hour schedule show,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Mm-hmm.
Take a look at the Patriots' last seven games.
Mm-hmm.
At Buffalo, home for Philadelphia,
mm-hmm.
at Baltimore.
Right.
Three straight home games, Pittsburgh, the Jets, and Miami,
mm-hmm.
and then at the Giants.
Mm-hmm.
Now, will the Patriots fly to those games or simply drive their individual cars to those seven games? It struck me back in April that their last seven games are pretty much all within miles of each other.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that they play their three road games at the Meadowlands, at Baltimore, and at Buffalo. Not a lot of travel involved there. So it's not like they'll be taking any West Coast trips.
Right.
Or anything, and that will certainly, I'm sure, help their cause. What I think, you know, what's going to be really interesting about the Patriots is knowing when they're going to play the rest of the season,
mm-hmm.
because they will be a flex schedule darling,
right?
As they already are with the Buffalo game,
and they already
Pittsburgh
are with
the Pittsburgh game has already been moved to 4:15,
right?
And you know, who knows? The last game of the season, maybe the league will just move that to a Wednesday. So everybody can see it.
Well, it's going
to
it'll be on NFL Network. Right.
So. I have friends at the NFL Network. I'm hoping they all get to see it too. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, no kidding.
But it'll be really, really interesting to see how this run goes and so on. And, for people who love history like I do, it's a chance to see history. And it'll be interesting to see if they can pull it off. And if there's one team that has, you know, it's one thing to talk about schedule. And it's one thing to project how bad a team and how they're going to play and who they're going to play and stuff like that. Here's what we can say with one unequivocal fact. No team in NFL history except the Patriots has ever won 19 games in a row.
That's true.
They've won 21.
They've won 21 in a row,
okay.
But obviously
the old record was 18.
Seasons. Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay, but no team in NFL history has ever won at least 19 consecutive games, be it over the course of two seasons or not,
right,
than the New England Patriots. So can they go 19-0? I say yes, because they've done it before. That's the only, and that's the sole reason I'm going to give you for now. Because they have done it before, they can do it again.
All right.
Will they? I don't know.
Yeah.
But they have proven at least they can do it, and they've proven it's something no one else can even claim.
This is true. We all know, though, that the Patriots could end up being their own worst enemy in some of these other games, and that will be a topic of conversation as the games crop up on the schedule. In the meantime, though, there is a slate full of games for Week 10, even though the Patriots are on the sidelines enjoying perhaps watching at home.
And the Patriots are actually favored in four of those games as well, as a matter of fact.
That wouldn't surprise me in the very least. Buffalo, the following week's opponent. Playing at Miami this week in a divisional game, and the Bills have certainly turned it up a bit over the last couple of weeks. They've won three in a row. They've actually got one win on the road as well, and I'd have to say that I'm somewhat surprised that the Bills have been able to put it together the way they have, especially with the back-and-forth nature of the quarterback spot, and it would appear that J.P. Lossman has the job back again.
Not surprised by the heart, but am surprised by the results. Because the one thing we've seen out of the Bills this year is they have played with an awful lot of heart. And they've had some games slip through their fingers. Also, beginning of the year, their defense really, they went into the season, John, as you know, without London Fletcher, without Nate Clements, who left via free agency. They lost their, who looked like a pretty good rookie linebacker, in Paul Posluszny, early in the season. They've had their share of injuries on defense, and yet, after being 0-3, they've won four of the last five games, and getting contributions from their younger players, Marshawn Lynch. Lee Evans has reemerged the last couple of weeks, starting to put some points on the board. They play with an awful lot of heart. They have a lot of savvy. But this is a game they have to be wary of, because now we are into the stage of the season when we start talking about the Miami, the Dolphins, and we start talking about the St. Louis Rams, both who are at 0-8, whereas teams have to be wary of not the fact of losing to them, but being afraid to lose to them. And that's as those teams go further, and who knows, maybe both the Rams and the Dolphins win this week. But you, and I've seen, that's why it's, I've always said, it is harder to go winless than it is undefeated. Because in this league of parity, a team can literally hand you a game with a couple of bad plays. Mm-hmm. Literally hand you a game. That's what the Buffalo Bills have to be wary of not getting into a game and saying, hey, wait a minute, wow, it's 16-7, we're trailing, and get out of their game plan, because it can snowball pretty quickly. So very very intriguing tilt. Miami's had a couple of weeks to recover from London, but they've also had a couple of weeks to recover from the worst start in the history of their franchise. They do put points on the board, I will say that, but their defense, I don't even say it's a shell of its former self. It's more like an embryo of its for its former self.
Russell, let me ask you this. I mean, I think we all realize that it's likely the Patriots could certainly go 16-0. What are the odds of not only the Patriots going 16-0, but having either Miami or St. Louis go 0-16 in the same year?
I'd say the odds are better that the Patriots go undefeated than those two teams go winless. But if I had to pick a winless team of two, I think I would pick the Rams rather than the Dolphins. The Dolphins at times have proven they can score points. The Rams, to me, their offense, which features a new offensive line every week, and it's not just Orlando Pace that they've lost. They've lost a lot of guys. Steven Jackson hurt most of the year. Mark Bulger playing with broken ribs at a time. And defensively, they just aren't up to snuff. They were a bad defense last year. They haven't improved that much. They get behind. They get behind quickly. They then throw the ball because they have to rather than wanting to, and then it turns out to be a disaster. So I still think the Patriots have a better shot doing what they're doing than the other two teams. But if I had to pick one, I would say it's the Rams more likely.
Okay. Okay, fair enough.
I wouldn't even be surprised if Miami won this week.
Really?
Because the one thing, well, because Buffalo's offense is not prolific.
Well, if that does happen, by the way, if Miami wins and the Patriots beat Buffalo next week, the Patriots clinch the AFC East.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Has and I know that you would know the answer to this, being the numbers guy. Has any team ever clinched the division title in Week 11?
You know, the 85 Bears, I have to double-check. As strange as it sounds, the 1997 49ers, I have to check.
Okay.
And I say that because they had the advantage, and sometimes it's math, the advantage of playing seven straight divisional games after their first game of the season. It was you'll remember this game, John, was 10 years ago. They went down to Tampa, and they lost Jerry Rice for the year, pretty much.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And
sure,
Steve Young got hurt.
Yeah.
But then the Niners, when it was still the old NFC West with five teams in it, played seven consecutive games versus divisional foes and won all seven of them. So they eliminated a lot of tiebreakers and got a lot of sweeps in there. It was just the way the schedule was set up. They were an early clincher, and I believe also the 1991 Redskins. Now, I might be off by a week, but those are the teams that you have to consider in terms of clinching their division early. So,
Russell,
but they might have it by a week. The Patriots could have it by a week if Buffalo cooperates or doesn't cooperate. So,
Russell, after the Patriots got by Indy, everybody in New England has looked ahead to Week 14, the Pittsburgh Steelers, and their defense right now, really the toast of the NFL as far as yards per game and points per game allowed. They're the best in the NFL. Maybe they're fattened up a little bit by a weak schedule thus far this season, but do you see the Steelers' defense slowing down the Patriots at all? If there's one defense in the NFL that can maybe slow this offense down a little bit, it has to be the Steelers.
Well, yeah, and, you know, I'll have to jump back on you here. Because I'm not one much for the weekend schedule thing, I have to be honest with you, because if we're going to start pointing out things, the Patriots do have the 1-8 and 0-8 Dolphins and Jets as among their victims this year. So I think you look at style. Now, while the one thing I've noticed with Pittsburgh this year is they're much more aggressive defensively than they were maybe even a year or two. They certainly were last year. I think last year they kind of laid back. The one thing about Dick LeBeau's defense is it is an attack-style defense, but you have to be intelligent to read it. It's not a power defense, okay? We have a tendency, just like we spent 20 years talking about counter-Trey every time someone ran left, and it really wasn't the case, to call every blitz a zone blitz. And the zone blitz scheme is not designed on anything but confusion. That's why you see defensive linemen drop back. You'll see linebacker. The thing about the zone blitz is you never know who's coming and when they're coming and where they're coming from. Okay? Now, who reads defenses better than a Tom Brady? Okay? So I don't think it'd be a case where he'd be necessarily fooled by all those things. There's one way to stop that Patriots offense, and that's to keep it off the field. Now, could the Pittsburgh Steelers do that? It depends on that if they also shift their emphasis of how they play offensive football. And you saw it a little Monday night. That's what I will say. I would say for the first seven games of the year, the Pittsburgh Steelers were really setting up the run via the pass. Now, the funny thing was, on Monday night, they only ran for 90 yards on 39 carries. But they were running on first down, running on second down, play action. Okay? And they made a lot of big pass plays. Those are the kinds of attempts and the carries that keep another defense off the field. That's the kind of style of football that you would have to play against the New England Patriots to keep Tom Brady and Randy Moss and Wes Welker on the sidelines. So I don't know if it's necessarily a matchup of the Steelers' defense. It'd be a matchup if Pittsburgh's offense can keep New England's offense off the field.
All right, now, Russell, I know it's a little early, but we figure it's the bye week, so we need something to talk about. The Patriots look like they're going to get a top-10 pick from the San Francisco 49ers right now. What do you think kind of holes they need to fill through the draft? I know we talked earlier about how I'm not very keen on Lawrence Maroney, and I think they should go in the direction of Darren McFadden, but what do you think there are some holes they need to fill, and they might fill with that top-10 pick?
Nothing like pushing the envelope here.
I think they need a quarterback.
Yeah, the offseason demand on Tom is going to be crushing.
Yes, he's tired.
Yeah, he's
okay?
Very tired.
No, you know, it's so hard to tell. The problem you run into asking the question so early is you don't know also what's going to be available, and you also don't know if you're the New England Patriots if you're necessarily going to keep the pick, okay? it might be something where Bill Belichick might want to take that and move down into the first round and pick up in the, an extra number two. That's the beauty of what they've done with the draft, is they just keep on picking up extra picks and extra picks, which is why they're in the position they are in now. So they had an extra number one because of their wheeling dealing with San Francisco last year. Listen, they don't swing and miss in the first round. They've done an excellent job, by the way, in the first round of getting good, solid defensive linemen. You know, Ty Warren, Vince Wilfork, Richard Seymour, all first-round picks. If you had to pin me down, common sense would probably dictate a linebacker because they don't seem to be getting any younger in that regard. But who knows? There might not be a good enough linebacker coming out of there.
Go across the hall and talk to Kuiper, will you?
Who is that guy?
The guy with the hair.
Yeah. That's Jimmy Johnson's hair.
Oh, okay.
In fact, this is what people don't realize. He received Jimmy Johnson's hair for a first-round draft pick.
I like it. Oh, beautiful. There actually are some other intriguing games around the league this week. In all honesty, I have to admit that some of them look like they'd be very well worth watching. I didn't think I'd say this a couple of weeks ago, but Cleveland playing at Pittsburgh on Sunday afternoon, to me, might have some playoff, if not divisional, implications in it.
No doubt. You know, and here's the funny thing, John. Last week was the game of the century.
Right.
This week is probably the most important weekend of the year in terms of positioning. Remember, it's only 14 games, but there are 10 divisional games this week and 8 rematches, including, you know, you have instances where you have, like, the whole division, the AFC North, is playing each other this week.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, both those teams played each – both those games are week one games, and how things have changed for both of the losers in those games, or I should say the one winner and one loser. The Cleveland Browns are really getting it done, especially offensively. They've scored 11 fewer points in 8 games than they did all of last year.
Wow.
Okay. Wow. Derek Anderson has thrown 17 touchdown passes this year and 8 interceptions. Him and Charlie Fry combined last year threw 15 touchdown passes and 25 interceptions. Braylon Edwards could be headed to the Pro Bowl. Kellen Winslow might not be far behind. They've done a great job of protecting the quarterback. Week one against Pittsburgh, they gave up 6 sacks. Last 7 games, they've given up 7 sacks. So they are really getting it done. The only problem with them is they don't have much of a defense. They don't generate a pass rush. They have 7 sacks as a defense in 8 games. So this could really be a free-for-all in terms of the passing game. Ben Roethlisberger's coming off 5 touchdown passes Monday night. He's thrown 20 already. That's a career high for him. What a turnaround for Big Ben. And it's a point I've made before. What has changed with Ben Roethlisberger last year is he has regained his escapability. You saw it the other night with Trevor Price draped all over him. He got away from him, threw a touchdown pass to Heath Miller. I think the Browns have a lot of momentum, and Pittsburgh coming off a short week. I like Cleveland, who rarely wins in Pittsburgh, to go in and win this game this week.
Wow. Stepping out, absolutely. Jacksonville also playing at Tennessee this week. And, you know, I guess we get a little bit clearer picture on Tennessee's capabilities because they seem to be somewhat inconsistent on offense. But I'm a little surprised that Jacksonville's taken it on the chin a couple of times.
Well, my pal Chris Berman has dubbed the Jacksonville Jaguars a year and a half ago the Yeah Butts.
The Yeah Butts.
And because every time we think they're about to take a step, they Yeah Butt.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but and think about what they're – and I had this discussion with a couple of people before the beginning of the season. It was one of my training camp points at the beginning of the season. Will the Jacksonville defense ever emerge as a consistent unit? Well, in week one, they gave up 282 yards rushing to the Tennessee Titans, okay? About 3 weeks later, they gave up 10 yards rushing to the Kansas City Chiefs. That would prove to be a little erratic. Last week, Drew Brees threw on them for 445 yards.
Yeah.
They are the epitome of the league, the erratic nature of the league.
Mm-hmm.
And they've gotten pretty decent quarterback play from Quinn Gray, the backup, helped put 24 points on the board, even though their defensive touchdown in there and a special teams touchdown. But it's not like they haven't moved the ball. But defensively, you just can't tell with them. They're now going to be without Marcus Stroud for 4 games. That's really bad news against a Tennessee running game. I'm going to give you 4 numbers. You tell me who this is, John, and your students can throw in as well.
All right. Ready, guys?
25, 27, 25, 31. That's not any of your locker combos, though. Don't worry.
25, 27, 25, 31.
What do those numbers mean?
Dan Klecko.
No. in regards to Jacksonville or Tennessee?
That would be in regards to Tennessee.
Wow. Anybody want to venture a guess? I think you've stumped them.
Well, I think those would be the carries for one Mr. Lendale White.
Ah.
The last four games.
No kidding.
After really being a non-factor as a rookie.
I was about to say, I don't think I'd ever seen that before, but now that you mention it, that's unusual. Yeah.
Right. 108 carries in the last four games, at least 25 in each of those four games, at least 100 yards in each of the last three games. He ran for 212 yards total on 62 carries the first 4 weeks of the season. So they have really changed their emphasis. Their defense has been outstanding. Albert Haynesworth, who for about 4 years looked like a major disappointment in this league, has really come to play this year. Some people, theorize it's because he's in a contract year, but he's having like a defensive player of the year type of year. You can't run on Tennessee. They physically beat you up. Not many people are going into Tennessee and winning. In fact, the only team that's gone into Tennessee this year and win are the Indianapolis Colts, who did it way back in week two.
Mm-hmm.
Until Jacksonville develops some consistency, they got a lot of good players, but they always seem to struggle against the Tennessee Titans. And they always struggle in the division, period. And I think Tennessee gets this one again.
All right, three other games I wanted to touch on real quickly before we let you go. Number one, Dallas playing at New York. Great NFC East traditional rival matchup. And the Giants at 6-2, the Cowboys at 7-1, arguably two of the better teams in the NFC right now. And without the Giants have a chance of catching Dallas in the division, probably hinges on them winning at home. Indianapolis, San Diego, for obvious reasons, the Sunday night game. And then your game, the Monday night game, San Francisco playing at Seattle. Start with the Cowboys and the Giants.
Well, Dallas is, remember these guys played on opening day? It was 45-35?
Yep.
Does anybody remember that the New York Giants gave up 80 points in their first two games?
Yes,
losing
that's correct.
Them both?
Right.
They've given up 79 the last six and won all six of them. Predicated by a pass rush, 30 sacks in eight games. They only had 32 all of last year. It helps out with some a revamped secondary. They got to get some heat on Tony Romo. I think the speed of New York's pass rush against a very big Dallas line, I think there's going to be some points again. The Giants, everybody's waiting for them to fall apart the second half of the year with good reason. The last 4 years, the last eight games, they're combined 8-24. They always start out about 6-2, and they always wind up struggling to get in the playoffs or not make it at all. But I think momentum is on their side this week, and I like the Giants.
Okay, really? No kidding. The Chargers at home against the Colts. The Chargers still trying to hang on somehow and stay close in the West with both Kansas City and certainly, I guess, Denver behind them. But Kansas City technically a little bit above them right now, and the Colts trying to rebound over the loss to the Patriots.
That gush of wind you hear is Adrian Peterson running by all the Chargers defenders again.
Yeah, no kidding.
You want to talk about inconsistency? Four wins this year, the Chargers have given up 30 points. Four losses this year, they've given up 134 points. This is a mystifying football team.
And I think they've got a very tough schedule down the road.
Well, they've got a lot of work ahead of them. And they already, they dug themselves. This is one of those games you don't think about now, but you'll think about it later. Losing at home to the Kansas City Chiefs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know they're tied for first. That home loss to the Chiefs, it might be something that comes back and bites them where.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how healthy the Colts are. They still had the bang up Hugo, see if Marvin Harrison plays, a couple linebackers and so on. I expect them to rebound. San Diego is just, they're simply too erratic for me, John, to take seriously right now. I mean, everybody thought they were on their way after that three-game winning streak, and then they went into Minnesota, and frankly, their offense scored one touchdown against the Vikings. Remember, they got the long Antonio Cromartie play.
Right.
So.
Right. And then a year game on Monday night, I bring it up only because it's your game, number one, and because, number two, Seattle's going to try to stay afloat as well. With all due respect to Elias's, San Francisco 49ers who are playing that night, Seattle's got to keep the job going, and they've got to win at home.
You are quite the company man, and not exactly the most attractive of matchups.
No, but I figured I'd throw it in anyway. Why not?
It's an important game. Seattle already beat them once. San Francisco has really been a disappointment. Injuries to Frank Gore, injuries to Alex Smith, the loss of Norv Turner as a coordinator, not necessarily the head coach. defensively they can't hold up anymore. I think they held out for as long as they could, but it's really been a struggle for them. And you know, even though Seattle is a little mystifying at times as well, last week their defense couldn't hold on to a lead in Cleveland. Sean Alexander has done a complete disappearing act. I know he's not necessarily healthy as well. We shall see. I gotta like Seattle. San Francisco simply can't put 8 points on the board.
No, they can't. Russell, as always, great to visit with you. Thank you for taking the time again this week. And I guess we'll check in with you on a little bit different time next week. Did Gary already talk to you about that?
Yes, he did. Okay. And to your fair students, congratulations on your endeavors. Are all journalism majors?
All of them are.
All communications majors?
Yep. All of them are. All are wannabe sports, you know, radio personnel or sports, you know, broadcasters of some sort.
Tell them I have a list of the people they're not allowed to copy.
One of them being Berman?
Now, wait a minute.
One of them being John
Rook. I know my bread is buttered. Yeah, I know my schwamm.
There you go.
You know?
What?
No, it's a different list.
That's right.
Congratulations to all of them, and have a great week, John.
Thanks, Russell. Thank you. Talk to you soon. You got it.
Okay.
That's Russell Baxter, is the NFL research coordinator for ESPN. All of the stuff that they do, whether it's .com, radio, television. This is the guy that's talking and providing the notes, but talking in the ears of Berman and TJ when they're on the set.
I didn't know it was possible to have that many numbers in your head.
Oh, he's amazing, isn't he?
He can go forever.
Yeah, he's amazing. He is a plethora of information, a walking football encyclopedia. He is the one man in Bristol, Connecticut, whose job is the NFL for 365 days.
Pretty good gig.
Yeah, it's a great gig. It's a great gig. He's thinking football when we've got pennant races. He's thinking football when we're in the NBA championships. He's thinking football when the Final Four is going on. He's the one guy there that has to keep his pulse on the NFL 365 days a year. It's a hell of a job. Pretty cool.
That'd be nice. I'd like to be that guy.
For a day, I'd like to be that guy. Some of the things that he does probably, you know, at ESPN, the people he gets to talk to and visit with and talk with and all the contacts the guy's made. Talk about contacts. That's a guy that you probably would definitely want to stay in touch with over the years. All right. Again, we've got Elias Feldman, Zach Wintrow, and Bethany Camise from Emerson with us here today as we kind of get through Patriots playbook for Thursday. We've got a lot more emails to get to. So you guys ready to tackle some of these?
Let's do it.
All right. We left off with Ken, who, let's see, where is he here? Oh, gosh, he wrote us a novel. Ken from Canton. We'll try to get through this in somewhat short order. But he says, since the Don Shula thing refuses to go away, even when he is backing off his original comments, he still manages to throw doubt on the Pats accomplishments of this year. Here's a rant I copied from PatsFan.com. Amen. The Pats fan is the writer. Did a great job. I think it's worth reading, and your audience will enjoy it, especially the Lance line. All right, we'll try to paraphrase a little bit. He says, let's not forget that Shula was basically forced into resigning so Wayne Azenga could hire Jimmy Johnson. Everyone understood, save for the old ball coach himself, that the game had passed him by long ago. What makes anyone think that now, some 12 years after his de facto firing, he understands the game any better than he did when Wayne canned his you-know-what? Yes, Shula won 328 games, but he also coached for 32 seasons. That's an average of 10.25 wins per season. However, he was basically a 500 coach when it counted most. He was 19-17 in the playoffs. He won two Super Bowls in 1972 and in 1973. He says, 1973? Nixon was president in 1973. Scarface was still 7 years away. Al Pacino still thought Dog Day Afternoon was his best work. Gas was under 50 cents a gallon. And the idea of bottling tap water and selling it for $1.50 for a 16-ounce bottle would have gotten you sent to the funny farm. So basically, Shula went 22 years without winning anything and somehow became an icon in South Florida, which goes to show you what Cubans know about football. How did he keep his job for 22 years without winning anything? Doll fans are delusional, and their owners pandered to them to their own detriment. That's how. Belichick in his 8 years with New England, 84 wins. If he coaches 32 years like Shula, he would shatter Shula's all-time coaching record for wins. And in the playoffs, when it really counts, Belichick makes Shula look like an embattled high school coach, going 13-3 in the postseason and winning three Super Bowls, the last of which was as recently as 2004. So if Shula wants to rant, let him be. Of course he's worried. Belichick and the Pats are set to take away the only thing Don ever did well in his life, which was go 17-0 way back in 1972.
Man, this guy is bitter. He does not like Don Shula.
Actually,
are you sure that's not Brian Fennessy sending an email? Because he's such a Dolphins hater.
Yeah, I know. Actually, I thought that again, that was a post on PatsFan.com. I actually thought that the writer was pretty accurate with Absolutely. Everything that he said. There's nothing unfactual or non-factual about what he said.
The only gripe I have with that is the fact that nobody's taking anything away from the 72 Dolphins.
No.
Even if the Patriots go undefeated.
They're just trying to discredit Shula a little bit, right. Saying that he was kind of, you know, washed up well before his time.
But this has perhaps done a good thing for the 72 Dolphins. It's brought them back into the spotlight a little bit.
I agree.
Generally, when a team makes a run at a record, the record holder gets a little bit of the public attention as well.
And here's the other thing. What you have to realize is that Jim Mandich, who has long been a Dolphins homer, he was a player on that 72 team, excuse me, and he does their radio color on their broadcast. And he was asked about this whole asterisk thing a couple of days ago. He gave the right answer. He said, basically, we know that their accomplishments on the field speak for themselves, and we would welcome the Patriots to the unbeaten club. That's the way to handle it. And you're right, Elias. The thing is that all this is going to do is make their accomplishment back in 72 stand out more, because you can't ever take the accomplishment away from them.
And why would you want to taint that if you're Shula? If you're Shula, why do you come into the public eye right at this point when your team is going to get a positive view from the public?
Absolutely. Plus, he has to realize, that he has those Shula's restaurants all over the country. One of them happens to be in Providence. So, if he wants to keep people coming into his restaurant, he probably needs to go nice.
Bad for business. That's what it boils down to.
Bad for business. That's right. Christian sends this email from Boston, and he says, the list below are the Pats' remaining opponents. Do you think the Pats will be favored over or under the spreads listed below? Somebody's trying to get some advanced homework done, I think, here. He says Bills, plus 14.
Oh.
What do you think?
I think it's going to be over.
Over that?
Definitely over that. The Patriots have been...
If they lose this weekend, if the Bills actually lose to Miami, it'll be over.
Definitely.
But if they win, I think 14's about right.
Yeah, I'd say so, yeah. I think the Patriots would cover that.
Of course, you consider they won 38-7 here, but...
I think the spread was 14 against the Redskins a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
And look what they did to the...
Why shouldn't it be greater against the Bills?
Right. Eagles, plus 17.
I think that's too high. I personally think it's too high. I like the Eagles a little bit. I don't think they're good enough to beat the Patriots by any stretch of the imagination, but I don't think they're 17 points worse. I think they're better than the Redskins. 17's a bit much. I would say maybe 11, 12. They get a good offense, the Eagles do.
I would tend to stay, I think, in that 14 range where the Bills are. Ravens plus 10.
I think that's
on the road. That's on the road.
And the Ravens have a good defense.
Yeah, but the Patriots, they're fired up, too, with all the comments made about, Delius Thomas and stuff. I think that they'd definitely get higher than that.
So you think they'll be favored by more than 10 on the road at Baltimore?
They'll at least cover 10.
Okay. Steelers plus 13.
Oh, really? Plus 13?
What he says, is that 13?
I guess because it's here at Gillette. But even still, 13 against that defense and Pittsburgh has the tools to stop the Patriots if anybody else does. So I know we've talked about
we've got to
beat into the ground. They have the running game, which that's the one weakness on the Patriots defense, and they have the physical defense that can stop the Patriots offense or at least slow them down a little bit so that the Pittsburgh offense can score enough points.
So would you tend to say under on
that? I would put it around 6 or 7.
I agree with Zach. Don't forget the Steelers offense trounced a very good defense on Monday in the Ravens. So they can put up points against a good defense as well.
Jets, plus 24.
Oh, that's a bit much.
See, that's what I like. Somebody stepping out and saying, if there was ever a game the Patriots are going to hang 50 on somebody,
that's true.
That one.
That's
true. It's
gonna
that
be
one.
Running up the score on that
Absolutely.
Game. I completely.
Let's try 100.
I think that's
going to be a
100-point
game right there.
I actually think that about 38 would be about right for that game.
I'm not Bill Belichick, and I'm not Bill Parcells.
No, you're not. Apparently not.
He's
Eric.
Smart.
That's right.
He's really smart.
Dolphins plus 25.
I would put it below the Jets spread. It just their defense can still be good if they want. If they at some points they're very very off again on again their defense.
They just beat them. What was it? 48, 49 to 20, whatever it was
in Miami.
In Miami, mm-hmm. Place where they never play well.
and you're going to get the Miami Dolphins up here in the cold and maybe still winless, I think that's a brutal beating.
And they're missing Ronnie Brown. You know what, you're right about that. I'm going to retract that statement.
I think that, too, could be right up there in that 30 to 35 range.
Yeah.
It could be ugly, but betting people say that if there's a spread of 17 or more, you take the underdog.
Generally speaking, if you do, but you win more than you lose.
But
that's
you don't
true.
See teams like this year's Patriots offense too often.
No. And then the final game is Giants plus 10. See, I'd be willing to come back on that one. I would go over on every one of those games,
really?
With the exception of the last one.
I would tend to agree with you on the Giants end, just because of their pass rush. Yep. All four defensive linemen could get to Brady. They're all very good. And
plus, I also think the Giants could have more to play for in that last game than the Patriots.
Absolutely.
Will.
After the first two games, we didn't think the Giants. We just blew that one off as another one of those games that the Patriots on their way to undefeated season. But now the Giants have something to play for.
Right. Well, that pick all depends on where the Patriots are at that point. Will Belichick pull out all the stops, or will he rest a few players going into the playoffs?
Depends. I mean, you know, they've done both. They will have hopefully a bye week to rest them. So I hope, and I think most Patriots fans hope, that they will push pedal to metal, especially
if
you have a chance to make history.
Absolutely.
And this is why the NFL is flexing the Patriots schedule to the primetime games, because I think the Patriots, and Dick Ebersol from NBC Sports said as much when they moved the Buffalo game to the Sunday night game a couple of days ago. He said the Patriots are history in the making. And whether you love them or you hate them, you're going to want to watch them, because you don't know when you're going to see this again. It's the whole Barry Bonds home run. We're watching Hank Aaron hit seven, you know, break Babe Ruth's record. You want to watch because you don't know if history is going to be made.
What did you say in class, John? Love me, hate me, don't ignore me.
That's
right?
Exactly right. Very good.
Nice.
Somebody was actually
something.
Somebody
I was sleeping
was,
at that point.
You were, that's what I thought. I figured that much out.
Absolutely.
Of you. Somebody was listening.
Can you pencil in the A now, or?
He's probably already got it anyway. Alex in Lexington says, all right, gents, I'm very happy of us being 9-0. I am not whining. I am just not thrilled with the way our offense had done against the Colts. We can give credit to the Colts, but our O-line sucked on the run. And I don't understand why. Our guys are bigger than the Colts' D-line. Why couldn't we lean harder on them? I know it sounds silly, but I read this analogy at NFL.com when they talked about Dallas' O-line leaning on our guys. You may ask, who cares about the running game? But come January, when throwing 50-yard bombs and making one-handed catches will be tougher, so running and short passing could be a difference maker. How can we improve the run game? Thoughts?
I think a lot of what the Patriots do now and is what they did earlier a few years ago. They don't necessarily have a running game per se, as more of a, they use the short passing like the running game. So I would say, especially in weather like we get here in New England in January, you're more apt to see them throw the dink and dunk and dink and dunk the Colts and any other team in the playoffs to death. More
than
you're going to see
them stop the dink and dunk,
more
so
than
you can go over the
exactly
top.
And you're going to see that more than you're going to see. There's a better chance of seeing the dinking and dunking than you have a chance of seeing Maroney have 35 carries.
Get healthy. Once the Patriots' backfield is healthy.
Well, we know Sammy Morris isn't going to be around for the rest of the year.
Right.
He's on IR. He's done. So I say, go get Ricky Williams.
Isn't he in the mountains in California?
No, he's in Boston.
Stuff?
He lives in Boston now. He absolutely lives right here.
Then that's when they smoke it.
He says he's not doing that stuff anymore.
Yeah, okay.
RJ says, did you guys notice the white dot on the end of the football last Sunday?
I stole my pot.
I saw it on the replay. Tom, not here, Tom. This is not the place. I saw it on the replay last night, and I'm assuming that's for Moss to see against the bright lights. Never seen that done before. Also, Tom's commentary about, he's talking about earlier from PFW. His commentary about Maroney got me thinking. In the beginning of his career last year, Tom Casale was saying that Maroney runs mean, like he's pissed off, but it seems this year that he's running scared in a way. He has pretty good production overall so far, but it seems like he's missing something, some of that explosion. I hope he finds it, because he was my favorite addition to the team last year, and I'm really pulling for him to break out. Just a thought. What do you think? By the way, I'm not sure that I saw the white dot on the end of the football.
Nope,
I'm not
I didn't,
sure.
see, it
I didn't see it.
No, I
hadn't
noticed it. I'm definitely going to look
that'd
for it now.
Email. That would have been a nice email to have before we talked to Adam and Russell.
Yeah, if they had seen that. Any thoughts on Maroney again? I mean, we've kind of covered it a little bit, but in all honesty, he's not running mean. I think he's running tentatively, and I don't know if that's stemming from, you know, his shoulder injury that he had in the offseason. He had the surgery, the fact that they treated him very gingerly to start the year. You know, he wore the red jersey all through, you know, training camp, and you know, and of course, then he missed a couple of weeks there, 3 weeks, I think it was, with the hamstring, and it just seemed like it was one thing after another. He just doesn't seem like we've got full explosion behind him.
And he may be a little disconcerted with regard to the role he's played in the Patriots offense this year. Last year, when Brady didn't have all the offensive weapons at the wide receiver position, there was obviously a much bigger burden on Maroney. This year coming in, he knew that he was not going to get nearly as many carries as he did in his rookie season. Right. So there you go.
Right. Okay, Andy in Vermont says, I just want to say, great job bringing in your students and allowing them some hands-on, or in this case, voice-on experience. Nice to hear Adam Schefter. I see him all the time on NFL Network. Jerry Rice was a workaholic who perfected running his routes and was probably the most fit athlete to play wide receiver with great hands. Randy Moss is just bigger, stronger, and his athleticism more natural. He has not had to work as hard as Rice. Not saying Randy doesn't work hard. Too bad there is no game this week for you to ask how can such-and-such team possibly inexplicably beat the Patriots, he says, laugh out loud. He says, keep up the great work and a big welcome to your students. So there you go. See? Shouts out to you guys. And we did bring up the conversation about trying to compare Ross. Randy Moss was some of the great receivers in the NFL. Certainly Jerry Rice's name came up. And the fact is that physically he may be the most talented receiver to have ever played the game. I would go that far with Randy Moss.
I would say that as well, but as the email alluded to, Jerry Rice had to work extremely hard. I'm sure he could come out and catch passes right now.
I'm sure he could too.
He still runs hills in the morning.
We know he can dance a little bit. So
he could dance a little bit, yeah. Unlike Mark Cuban.
No, he was awful.
That was awful. But Jerry Rice
being nice to him, by the way.
Oh, absolutely.
His father was a bricklayer.
Yeah, that's right.
He would catch bricks every day. Growing up in the summer.
Right.
The best hands in NFL history.
That's right.
I mean, just because he works the hardest doesn't necessarily... I'm not saying that he's not the best receiver of all time. I'm just saying you have to. Just because Randy Moss doesn't work the hardest doesn't mean he still can't be the best receiver of all time, and he definitely has the tool set to do it. That's all I'm saying.
I think he's the most naturally talented, like his abilities.
And I bet you if he put the work in that Rice did, he would be far and away the best receiver of all time.
Maybe that's one of the reasons why he's excelling this year, because he's putting in that work, because he's in an environment in which he feels comfortable and which he feels confident, and people appreciate him for what he does on the field and could care less about his off-field antics such as they were, you know, a time ago. He's in a comfortable spot. Now look at the results you're getting. And I think this adds credibility to what Adam Schefter told us here earlier in the program, that Randy is not going anywhere. And Adam Schefter thinks that definitely Randy Moss is going to sign for shorter money than he could get on the open market and stay with New England.
And I totally agree with that. Yeah. He doesn't want to go anywhere.
Makes a lot of sense.
Absolutely.
Scott in Washington, D.C. says, regarding the Patriots running game, I too am concerned about Maroney. However, there are several things that should be noted, including the following. The Patriots actually ranked fourth in the league ahead of the Colts, at least until after this past weekend. Maroney and Adai both average 4.7 yards per carry. Colts have 5 more rushing touchdowns, but the Patriots have thrown for twice as many touchdowns as the Colts. Interesting numbers.
I'm still an old school type of run game guy where I like the bruiser more than I like the guy who's going to dance around the corners. Don't get me wrong, Barry Sanders is one of the greatest running backs, and if he probably would have played a full career, he would have been considered the greatest running back of all time. But I like the guys who can really mix it up in between the tackles, only because those are the guys who are the most valuable to the team come January.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
A guy like Maroney, I just don't think he's as valuable as he could be if he could mix it up in between the tackles more than he does.
Adai has been huge for the Colts, especially with Marvin Harrison.
I think Joe Adai showed last week why he's one of the best running backs in the NFL. I mean, I think he certainly had to put Adai, based on what we saw of him and what he did against New England, I think he had to put him in at least the top half dozen, without a doubt.
Oh, absolutely.
He's top three in rushing yards in the AFC.
Right. Right. So, you know, I mean, you can think of Peterson. You can think of, you know, if you want to, you know, come up with a guy like Larry Johnson at Kansas City. I mean, you can probably come up with two or three others. I think you can probably still throw LT in there, even though he's had a subpar year for him. But I think you've got to include Joe Adai in the category simply because of his ability to take the ball with the pass as well as the run.
Oh, absolutely. And he showed right. He could do that in the first half of the game this weekend.
Absolutely. Let's see. What else do we have here? Ah, here we go. This one comes from Michael. Michael is in Virginia, and he says, since there isn't too much to talk about today, I thought I would email in about next year. What are the Patriots going to do about defense next year? Here is a list of possible retirements after this season. Bruschi, Harrison, Sal, Vrabel. Also, Asante Samuel and Randall Gay may hit the market and go elsewhere. That's a possibility of six people leaving. What do you think the plan should be going forward?
I think I'm a...
Bethany is stunned on that one. She's like, not that many guys! No! I like that. That's good. What do you think? Bethany, come on. Tell us. What do you think?
I don't think we'd lose that many guys. I could see Seau, Brusky. I don't see Vrabel ending this year.
I don't
personally.
Either.
Like, I don't see that happening.
I don't see. In fact, Seau, I think if the Patriots go out and they do win this, I think Seau's the only one of that four that does go.
Yeah, and he still has the talent. I think that he could go out. Like, this could be his last year, but I could see Brusky still playing another
sure.
year as well.
Sure, I could too.
If Brusky wanted to go out, he would have gone out the year after
exactly.
his stroke.
Yeah.
If he wasn't going to come back for 2 years.
Right. Right.
Absolutely,
absolutely
not. I think that's one of the things I was trying to get with Russell was that I think a main focus of while I would like to see them get McFadden, I think one of the main focuses for this draft in the offseason, and I think he alluded to a little bit about draft trading down for more picks later on, is filling holes in the defense because most of their guys on offense, most of the offensive players are locked up for next year, so there's not going to be much turnover on that side of the ball. That's going to be a main focus for them in the draft is drafting good, solid defensive players like they've been known to do the past 6 years.
Well, Asante Samuel is in all likelihood going to be an unrestricted free agent.
I think he's
on the market.
I think he'll be gone. Maybe that allows Randall Gay a chance to stay. Maybe they cut a deal with Randall Gay.
Absolutely.
Because Samuel may be the one that does go. That's
I
what I think.
See him of all those players, definitely him being the one that leaves.
I think, of those six players, Samuel and Seau, I think, would be the two most likely.
Absolutely.
That's what I think. Okay, good stuff. This one comes from Gary. He says, the only other clubs that have clinched a division crown after playing 11 games have been the 85 Bears, the 97 49ers, and the 2004 Eagles. All right, well, that was what we were talking about with Russell earlier, and he was right about the 85 Bears and the 97 49ers. I can't believe you didn't come up with that, Elias, okay, so you're being the 49er fan. The 04 Eagles, I didn't know. That they clinched after 11 games, the NFC East.
I didn't realize that either.
No, I didn't either. So NFC East must have been lousy that year, like the AFC East this year.
Oh, so, that's terrible.
Yeah. All right, that's good then. So if the Patriots do clinch next week in Buffalo, then they would be the fourth team to clinch after 11 games. So just a little food for thought. And this one comes from Nick, who says, you continue to repeat Jim Mandich's statement welcoming the Pats to the undefeated club and good for him. However, I must report to you that Mandich piled on R.E. Spygate in running up the score. Both he and Hank Greenberg went to town on the classless line and the someone is going to hurt Brady because of the running up of the points. Currently, both have cleaned up their act on the air, perhaps only until Pats versus Dolphins, too. And while that doesn't surprise me either. First of all, they play to their audience. If you're a local talk show host, and you guys are learning this as we go along here, but if you're a local host, you pander. You pander to your audience. You cater to your audience. You talk to them about what is interesting in their minds. And, of course, Dolphin fans could care less about the Patriots. Dolphin fans hate the Patriots. Dolphin fans would do whatever they could to hurt the Patriots. I'm sure that's why they're talking about it, because that's what they want to hear. But when you're talking to a regional or a national audience, is different. And Mandich's comment was made that was carried on a national wire and a national talk show. So, it's natural to expect that he is going to back off of this statement. Where you get the really interesting stuff is when you say the thing that you do for the local audience, you repeat it for the national audience. That's where you really stir the drink. Apparently, none of those guys are willing to do that.
Well, something that's going to be entertaining and purely for entertainment's sake is when the Patriots face the Dolphins. Will Shula show up? Will he be there? And will he open his mouth again?
Doubtful.
Is that week 16 they got him, or week 15?
No, it's the week before. Four. Yeah, 15? Because the Giants are the last week. Well, actually, it's 17.
Yeah.
It will be 17.
So it's 16. Right. It's Jets 16. 15, Dolphins 16, Giants
right.
17.
Right, okay. Exactly. I think that's how it plays out. So I think, and you know that the national media will descend upon South Florida as the Patriots approach those last couple of weeks, especially not only when they play the Dolphins again here, they'll go down to South Florida to do preview stuff all week long leading up to the game. But that week that the Patriots play at the Giants, they'll be camped out down there to get their reaction on this stuff.
Absolutely. I think he brings up one good point, though, is that teams are going to be looking to get after Brady more harder than normal. And I think that's one concern about playing him in weeks 15, 16, 17, especially if – or even 12, 13, 14, 15 when the AFC East is locked up. I know they still want to get the number one seed, so that's something to play for. But that's one thing – I know we had this in our two-minute drill in class. We discussed running up the score. And I'm on the end that if the score gets out of hand and you know and it's in the bag, get your starters out of there, get as many as you can out of there. I know they want them to get work in for games like the Colts games, but you can't have extra risk for hurting a guy like Brady or Moss when they're so integral to the team's success.
But Brady hasn't been hit. He's been sacked 3 or 4 times all season?
Something like that.
Yeah.
So there's not a big risk there. If the offensive line is healthy, Brady, he can sit in the pocket all day.
But if you're playing a team like the Dolphins or the Giants, who have Jason Taylor, who have Osi Umenyiora and Michael Strahan and all those guys up front, he's going to take more hits. Even a team like the Colts, who have Freeney and Mathis, he's going to take more hits because those guys are better. I don't care how good the Patriots offensive line is. Those defensive lines are still better. He's going to take some hits. You want if the game's in hand. I know the Colts game was never in hand, so that's obvious. But the other games, you got to get him out of there as soon as the game is over and done with in the bag. Get him out of there, just because you can't risk losing Brady. Because we saw what you have after Brady. You have Matt Cassel and Gutierrez.
Well, Belichick,
you do not want to.
All right. We won't go there. Hey, is that the two fastest hours you've ever spent on the radio?
I guess it was a good show.
Yeah, absolutely. Good job. Now, I'm going to give you guys, if you want it here, you can have a chance. If there's one thing you wanted to talk about before we finish out, you got a shot here. Anybody want to?
I mean, we already talked. I wanted to get in about the pick next year, the 49ers. I think that's big. The big thing that's been overlooked is the fact that we have the 49ers first overall, the first round pick.
Okay.
I was talking about this with Zach. The Revolution are here tonight. I think we're going to keep our press pass and stick around.
There you go. Woo! Yeah. Don't forget now, kids. Next Tuesday's program here on Patriots Playbook. From 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time, we play Patriots Match Game 2007. You're going to have to tune in to believe this one. It's going to be a lot of fun. We've got special panelists. We've got prizes.
Hi, I'm Christina Acra from Patriots Today.
Yeah, and we have Christina Acra. And believe me, she's worth the price of admission. So you definitely want to tune in for that. It'll be next Tuesday, 2 p.m. Eastern Time. Don't miss it. Enjoy the Patriots list. Let me try that again. That's a good one, isn't it? You want to play the other one that you have for me? As we wrap up. Let's try that again, shall we? Good idea. As we wrap up. Enjoy the Patriot-less football weekend, everybody. We'll see you next Tuesday.